Welcome to Biggest Geekus. We're your hosts. I'm Randy.
I'm Joe.
This is episode 38 of our podcast, and the date is Wednesday, May 26, 2021. What's shaking, Bacon?
Well, I have been totally inspired. I wrote an article. It has rave reviews from two or three people.
Dude, I liked it. It was good. On the orcs, right?
Yeah.
That was very good. That's pretty cool. I think our little... We need to get our heads together on that little project you supposed, because I need more of an idea what you're talking about. And we may, hopefully, within the next year, give ourselves a lot of wiggle room, maybe have a PDF on drive-thru. That'd be cool.
That would be extra cool.
But we'll see. I think it's a cool idea. We'll see how it works out. But nothing to say about it now, because it's kind of nothing. But Joe's got a little bit. I have some ideas, but nothing jotted down. All right.
When we're done, you're going to have to remind me, because now that I'm thinking about it, I'm not completely recalling the idea.
Supernatural.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Got it? That's all I needed.
Yep.
That's all I needed.
All right, bro.
I am...
Getting ready to show us some sweet call-in action?
Yeah, I'm just going to make sure I get the right ones. Yeah, okay.
You've been on here last week. Jason, number one?
Jason is number one, like always.
That's my man, number one.
All right, he only has three this week.
Cool.
So, Heather, here we go.
Yes. I need to see him.
Oh, hold on. It would behoove us.
Joe's kind of greedy. He likes to hear all the stuff and me not know, and then I'm just randomly commenting on crap that has nothing to do with it. He finds that hilarious.
Yes, because that's how I do.
That's how you do.
Have you watched much of Zay Frank?
Save Frank?
It's Z E Frank. One word. He
No. He what, is that a podcast really, or a YouTube?
It's a YouTube thing.
And I'll check it out.
He does little cool little wildlife things where there's animals on the screen, interesting off the wall animals, and he talks about them. And it's pretty funny.
Groovy.
But he says that a lot. That's how the otter do.
Sweet.
Hey guys, Jason here. Just listen to the call-in segment. Sorry about the drunk, confused call-ins. Won't do that anymore. I think for the most part, we're all in the same sheet of music. The Christian analogy I used was a poor one, because I totally agree with what you're saying. I was coming at it from that direction. Somebody was just trying to be disruptive, but I didn't articulate that very well. So, no, I think we're all you guys and I are pretty much on the same sheet of music for all this stuff. So, anyhow, let me listen to the rest of the show.
As it should be.
As it should be. Simpatico with Jason. All is good with the world.
As far as Destiny's Child goes, I agree with Joe. You know, the player can play that way, and they can think that they're the chosen one, but the dice are going to decide that, and, you know, they might find out the hard way that they're not, right? It's just what it is. The DM should be under no, threat or no force to let characters survive. You know, it's kind of like Lucio Fulci's Conquest in the movie. If you kind of think one thing at the beginning of the movie, and then partway through the movie find out, oops, it's not the way I thought it was at all. So there you go. As far as in the same conversation, you talked about what something that's in the zeitgeist right now. Procedural dungeons or procedural games. And like I say, a couple other podcasts have been talking about procedural games lately. And the idea of procedural game is you have everything set out, wandering monster tables, weather charts, you know, you use the random treasure tables, use morale rules, all that stuff. And the game plays more like a board game at that point. Of course, the GM is still doing stuff. The DM is still out there playing the NPCs and doing all that. But they're letting the dice kind of make those decisions for them instead of having a plot ahead of time. And I've run games where, not necessarily procedural games, but games where I just had a real rough outline, like a sentence or two background, and let the players go, and I just reacted off the cuff to what they did the entire game. And I think that's a good exercise to do now and then to build your improvising skills as a GM. But I wouldn't necessarily want to run every game like that.
Man, I tell you, I wish I could do that. I need to make myself do that because I am so loath not to come into a game like with billions of, you know, plans and, you know, contingencies. So the procedural thing, help me out here. So the definition of a procedure is a method or process of doing something. So I guess the idea is you're accessing tables in some sort of manner, roll for the weather, roll for an encounter. And that's the idea. But I've heard a lot of DMs say they like to do that, and then they end up coming up with a cool adventure because tables inspire them. Now, I've always used tables and charts more like to inspire me when I'm prepping. In game, I'm kind of loath to use them, but that's because I'm nervous about being random and, I guess, pushing my own abilities.
Well, I think a little bit, or however much you want to do, of the procedural, as Jason puts it, is, you know, up to you, obviously. But I don't think, when we were talking about it, I think it would be fun to do it completely off the cuff.
Yes.
But not on the regular.
Unless you're just a phenomenal GM that can pull crap out of your butt. It's hard to imagine every week being able to pull it off.
Right. So I think, one, you have a jumping off point and you riff off the players, but you still have some plans. And yeah. Then have those tables for backup.
Or to make things interesting.
Make things interesting, yeah.
Cool twist, big surprise, cool. Big reveal, yeah.
And have random encounters on the way to point B.
Yeah.
Because, yeah. You know, players should never be safe and say,
agreed.
Ah, I have three uses of my power. I'm good to go.
Yes. No more than three or four encounters a day. So I can, the first encounter was easy. I can use it every single encounter this time. Yeah. That's kind of, I'm kind of against that style too. It's just a preference. It's not wrong.
Yeah.
But that procedural gaming was mentioned by Glenn this week. I don't know if you heard Glenn's most recent episode, but
yeah,
he mentioned a little bit about that. And I was kind of like, what are they talking about? I'm going to do some research. That intrigues me. I want to check it out because I think they said that OSR games fell into procedural games. I guess when I first hear the word, it doesn't seem to match what they're saying, but maybe.
The thing is, most of the things about D&D is a procedure. So I think it's probably a bad term, although it's maybe. What we have at the moment.
Yeah.
I don't see a big problem with it.
No, I just want to get down to preference. I want to see what folks are talking about. It sounds interesting. I like when something's buzzing through different areas of the gaming world. One comment, too, before we move on to the next one, about the Destiny's Child thing. See, with me, as I said last week, I've made that mistake. But since I'm such a kind and gentle GM, there's literally no danger of that character dying or any other character dying in my campaign. Well, wouldn't you agree, Joe? Houston.
I think that you are thinking about a different reality than one than the
one everybody else is. That was the other dimension, yeah.
Yeah, other dimension, that other place. Bizarro world.
Bizarro Randy.
Yeah, that's the Randy without the goatee.
Right. See, crazy man. I am like pushing limits here.
There, incidentally, in that vein. I was on Twitter because I'm a masochist. And there was a question asked, how do you handle PC death as a DM?
I hand them a character sheet and we roll on.
Yeah, I don't really. I put down something along the lines of, yeah, you know, your handcrafted, organic, artisanal character, when they die, you know, it's kind of rough, but...
Look, it is. I mean, I think it's cool if you can have some kind of in the game, especially if you guys have been adventuring for a while and your friends have a somber moment to let them, you know, the passing of their friend or do, you know, a la Superman, funeral for a friend. That'd be cool. But, you know, I'm not going to I don't know. Sometimes it's tough, though. You can see the disappointment on players' faces, and I feel sad for a moment. Then I'm like, wait a minute. I really don't care. So let's go.
Pretty much. I mean, it's just a piece of paper, really. Well, I mean, there's some investment it, you should do so that you play your character well. And there's been times I didn't like my character dying.
Of course not. It sucks. It's not fun.
Yeah. But it's part of the game. So
part of being an adventurer. Life's dangerous.
It should be.
I agree.
If you don't want danger, play 5th edition.
Boom, boom, jam.
Yeah.
Hey, guys. Tim here calling. Long-time listener, first-time caller. You guys were asking about Cabin Con experiences, so I just wanted to give my two cents. I thought Cabin Con 15 was excellent overall. For one of the bigger Cabin Cons, I was really probably the best of the bigger ones that I've been a part of. Easily top 10, although I've only been to 9 of them, so that's easier for me to say. My Spelljammer game I thought went through great. The superhero games all were cool that I was part of. The only kind of criticism that I would have had of it is that there were some times it was difficult to get a game together. Luckily, we had Larry and Lewis, who were both willing to win games. So overall, excellent Cabin Con. It was a lot of fun. Hope to see you guys soon. I listen to all your podcasts. And is it the next Cabin Con yet?
You know, long time listener.
Yeah.
We've been on the interwebs for a year, so that How might long? Be appreciated though. From
we the do, yeah. Our boy Tim, man, he's a dude.
He made a Spelljammer from scratch. I mean, it doesn't fly, but it looks cool.
Oh, it's so awesome! Yeah, his prop, and I heard his game was the bomb. I wish I could have played in it.
We were
busy running 1,000 games.
Though. Yeah. The bigger the con, the number of games issue comes up when it gets bigger.
That's been consistent. We could probably track that, and there would be a 1-to-1 correlation.
Pretty much, and it comes from whether we have the desire to be really organized or not. And I think we've come to the decision, at least. I have, and it seems like you too, that while you would love to be in command, it's better that we just let folks find and play their games, because it gets a little annoying when folks are like, nobody wants to play with me or something like that.
Yeah, and it's probably not that whiny, but it sounds like that sometimes, and I get a little put off. But the truth is, I mean, really, it probably would be run best if I were to not only organize the games, but assign adventures for you to run and then assign games for you to play. No, I'm with you. That's the teacher in me wanting to control and organize. And okay, this person, 15 minutes class, we're going to do this. I'm going to get them on the board. Right. We're going to do this. But I think we got to just be bold. Like you said, you got to take initiative. And next year, we're going to try putting, you know, the games up on their own individual pieces of paper, like a cork board. I think Greg T. said he'd have that. And, dude, you got to find the GM and say, hey, can I play in your game? And look at people. And I'm just going to say it right now. I mean, not trying to be a butthole, not trying to be an arrogant butthole. I can do that sometimes. I'm not trying to here. My games fill up fast. And if people come and say, hey, can I play? I'm going to say yes. And if I'm probably going to try not to do much beforehand, but also we've said before, if I pick out 4 or 5 of you guys and say, hey, you guys want to play this at Cabin Con? Like, yeah, that's fine too. But you want to leave
other people can do that too.
They can. They can make a plan beforehand. You know, say Lewis and Tim and Mark and Josh and, you know, John all want to play a game of My Little Pony D&D, which we had that happen at Cabin Con. Then go ahead, man, knock yourself out. Yeah. Plan it out. We're playing. All right, cool.
And not calling you a whiner, Tim.
Not at all, dude.
No,
Tim's legit, dude. He runs plenty of games, offers lots of stuff up. He was one of the dudes that stand up. He's a stand-up guy. He'll play. He'll run. He doesn't care. So it's cool. Tim is solid.
Yeah, he is.
I also wanted to add, guys, that ideas are already percolating for Cabin Con 16, so Randy's white box game really got my head into a good space for the homebrew campaign that I've been threatening people with for years now. So I've been trying to find a system to work with that, and the white box finally feels about right. So we'll see if maybe I can get that going for next year. Also, another criticism is, where the heck are the videos? I don't see them on YouTube. They might be on the website. I admit I haven't been to the website in a long time, but they're not on YouTube. What the hell, Joe? What the hell? All right, that's it for me, guys. Take care. Have a good day.
Good job, Tim. Get on, Joe. What's up?
Well, I got the videos myself yesterday.
Okay. Excuse, boy.
And I put them up today.
24 hours? What is wrong with you?
That's a little slow. I'm slacking. I should have put them up in advance before I got them.
Absolutely. That's what I'm talking about. But so that's some good good points. Homebrew white box, dude. I'm with you. I'm feeling it hardcore. I really want I'm gonna play some old school Swords and Wizardry. Yeah. I talked to Tinkar and messaged him the other day. I missed the Kickstarter for. They did a new box set of Swords and Wizardry. It's the same as a complete rule book, but it's little booklets, like four booklets for the monsters,
yeah,
the
DM stuff. I saw his review, yeah.
And I really want to get that. Don't want to play an arm and a leg, but I'm hoping that Goodman Games or Frog God, whoever did it, hope they put it up for everybody's consumption. And he said Bad Mike might have a few at North Texas RPG, which won't help me any, but hopefully the Frog God, I think it's Frog Gods. Frog Gods, is that who it is? Anyway, I think it is. They'll have them for sale soon for the common peons, just not the special edition. They had actually had a, what was it? A wood grain box, faux wood grain box. Cool.
Yeah, for the collectors. Mm-hmm. For folks like me, the regular book is fine. I like hardbacks now and again, but... the wood grain, special leather. Well, if it's the... I know that the Hackmaster book comes that way. It's not special edition. It's the way it comes. Mm-hmm. So I had to pay a little extra for that. But if there's a cheaper regular version that's not faux leather or whatever, I prefer to get those because they're less expensive.
Yeah.
So... All right. Thanks, Tim. Now, we have a special caller. Mm-hmm. His review was featured, was it last time or the time
before? Yeah, I think so. I think it was last time.
And this is Goodmania 7000.
Right on.
Hello, Biggest Geekus. Goodmania 7000 here. I thought it was only fair that I left you a message after you read out my completely objective iTunes review that I left for you. I gotta say, I'm impressed. You took that with good humor. You surprised me. I thought you were gonna go off on some rant, but well done. Well played. I do actually like listening to your podcast. Well, parts of it, let's say. There's a lot of it that I find pretty noisome. That means smelly, by the way. So, yeah.
It's interesting how the British have what I would say a weird noisome. Maybe it's reference to a fart.
That sounds like he said it was noisome was smelly.
Smelly, yeah, it's weird.
That is weird.
Sound,
but yeah, thanks. Contact us. That is bold, dude. Kudos to you.
Yeah,
you got some more too, right?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, and incidentally, we don't try not to hate on people.
No,
we hate on what we think are bad ideas, and those are all also completely objective.
Yeah, completely. I think I know this dude from other podcasts. I think this his name is Andy, right?
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, he's got some good stuff to say. I've heard it before. Go ahead.
So far, you are rancid and smelly and noisome. So rotten and smelly. I mean, that's a bit mean of me, isn't it, really? I mean, I don't know what you smell like or taste like, and I don't want to know. But I can guess. I can imagine. It's the power of the imagination, you see. That's what we get from audio podcasts. I'm sure if we met in real life, we would probably not like each other at all. Because after all, I am a black, pink-haired, one-eyed, one-legged lesbian social justice warrior, aren't I? Oh, no, I'm not. I'm a middle-aged white guy. All right. Thanks.
I don't know why I wouldn't like it. We could disagree. That's fine, dude. It's no problem. It doesn't matter to me. Believe what you want. It's cool.
Yeah.
And look, the point I am making by saying that is, you know, I'm much more in your demographic than the demographic of the millennial snowflake. But it doesn't mean I have to hate them. It doesn't mean I find them annoying. I find them annoying. But, you know, old fuckers like us, excuse my language, have always found young people annoying. That's just how it works, mate. That's just how it works. So I just drop it. Just drop it, because you're actually making your product worse by having this. And I know you've probably got an audience that loves it, but, you know, why pander to them? Just talk about gaming. You're good at that stuff. The rest of it, sack it, mate. Sack it.
Well, I guess you're entitled to that opinion. We don't hate anybody. Well, I don't hate anybody.
I'm to be fair, and to be fair with Andy there, I think I have a hard time. I battle with that. Anger toward people, not so much toward ideas. And Joe is a little more balanced there. I mean, that's a weakness as I'll admit, a sinner that I am, and I pray that I get better at that. But it's a hard. My mom says I come by my red hair naturally, which means I have a bit of a temper. Joe's seen it my whole life, and it's no excuse. It's not an excuse. It's wrong to be that way. But I can tell you that there are ideas I just despise, and there's no way I'm not going to say anything about it, because you know this is our podcast, and I'm going to say it when I despise the ideas. Joe will correct me if I go down a path that's blasting people. But tonight we're going to have some big time negative planes. So we're trying to focus it more toward one segment, things we're frustrated with. And it's cool if you don't listen to that. And I think everybody can do it because it's after the show's over. So I guess we do stick in jabs every now and again. But, you know, who doesn't? And by the way, that is hilarious. We're old effers, just like you said. We are, too.
Gray hair and all. So yes, thank you to all the callers.
Absolutely.
And welcome to receive more. Please call, let us know how we're doing, and all that.
Yeah. All right. We need these like bells that tinkle. We can transition to the positive material plane. And for me, tinkle, what I'm pumped
tinkle,
about,
tinkle,
is what I want. Almost like when you go to the bathroom, right? So what I'm pumped about this coming weekend, actually, I believe it's Monday, we're going to be Savage World and Sanctuary again.
Yes.
That's sounding good.
It is.
I'm pumped about that. So I guess I better do something to get an adventure ready, which I already have a couple ideas because basically awesome. But yeah, so that's pretty cool. And I'm excited about that. Getting to game again on the regular in face to face. Joe will get to see this lovely face in person.
I don't know if I'm going to be able to control myself.
You better. I got no time for that. I'm DMing. Got things to do. I'm saying rolling dice, checking
dice. I'm just talking about throwing stuff at you. That's all.
Oh, that's not true. I'll just bring my shields up.
Yeah.
All right. But anything cool with you, positive this week, where you can be a little less?
Well, yeah. Like I was saying, the art, a couple of people liked it. It's always good to have a little bit of positive vibes. One person on the article, and I'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah, dude, that article was good.
Put WTF, nothing else. And I'm like,
really?
Yeah, that's helpful.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, you can dislike it, but
yeah, okay. Yeah. That's good. And there's an emoji in MeWe, which is where this interaction happened. It's a skull, right? Not the skull and crossbones. It's just a skull.
What does that mean?
Without the lower jaw. And apparently it just, there's this expression, and my wife was saying it. She watches a lot of younger folks on YouTube.
Okay.
And they have this expression, I'm dead.
They're dead from reading it, or you're dead from writing it?
That's what they'll say when they see something that they really like and they're kind of overwhelmed. I'm dead.
And they like it. That's a good thing.
Yeah. So after I saw that, I was like, okay. If that's what they're meaning, I looked it up in the some kind of emoji dictionary.
Hopefully they don't mean I'm coming for you, sucker. But your article's pretty cool. And I don't give a, people get so mad about it. You just said you like your orcs to be monsters. Okay.
Monsters should be monsters. It's fairly non-controversial.
in the end, it's just your opinion, mostly too. So who cares? We all got one, right?
Yeah.
That in a butthole.
Yeah. I'm not saying that's the only way I play it either. But no. It was just a random thought came through my head. And I just decided to write it up.
Yeah.
That's all.
Okay. Anything else positive? I'm just pumped. I'm pumped about playing.
We are. I don't know what to think about Anchor stats. And over the last few days, it was edging up toward for weekly audience around 70.
Huh.
So,
but you don't know if that's 70 unique people.
It says unique.
Okay. Dude, that's sweet.
Our UK listenership used to only be like 1%.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, I thought, just the one, John from Red Dice Diaries, but it's up to like 15 or 17% now. So
that's because I think, okay, Andy, and you can correct me on this. I think Andy lives, I've heard this, his voice is familiar. And I think he's a dude that lives in the US, but he's clearly from Great Britain somewhere. And I appreciate, those guys can be pretty reasonable. I mean, even when we call this noisome and rancid, my feelings aren't hurt.
No.
I mean, the dude is like, that's a cool way, and it's good. I think we'd have a good time debating him. I think it'd be fun. And then we could have a beer afterwards. Wouldn't hurt my feelings at all. So, that'd be fun. Or not. And we'd find out we like to throw dice at each other. You never can tell.
But yeah, I thought it was interesting. We'll see how it works out.
Yeah.
With the numbers.
Yeah. All right. So, main topic, which may not be as long as negative material plane today. What does evil do? What does it mean? What's the purpose? How do you set up some sweet villainous
stuff?
Yeah. So I got a little definition. There's several of them, and I forgot where I found this at. It was not Miriam. I think it was the Google one. I like the Google one a little bit better. So there's others, but it says definition of evil, profound immorality and wickedness, especially when regarded as a supernatural force.
Yes. All we'll have to speak about your lack of citation later.
Yes. If I was being graded, I would get an F because I'm not citing my stuff. But then again,
F plus,
which means I'm improving because I admit that I don't cite well.
Right. Yeah, I agree with this definition.
So we Joe bounced the idea off me, the seven deadly sins, just kind of a place to begin.
Mm-hmm.
So most people know them. Pride, greed, lust, envy, gluttony, what else? Wrath, anger, or sloth.
Right.
And so those things, do they, when you're building a villain, Joe, do they come to your mind? Do you start thinking like that? I don't know if I do. When I'm playing D&D, I think more of a character class, strangely enough.
Right.
Evil this, evil that. Doesn't have to be that, but I mean, do those things pop in your mind?
Not as such. But after we talked or messaged each other back and forth about this, I was thinking that thinking about that kind of motivation might be better than just the stats.
Right. So if you're going to have your and by the way, just a note, I didn't do this because it was late last night. Our boy Angry GM has got a great article on villains as plots. We may do a small thing next week because I want you to read that article and have time to absorb it. It's kind of fascinating how your villain, he says, villains are not an NPC until the players encounter them. Villains are a plot, an adventure. The big bad, as it were, he's not an NPC until he's actually encountered. And he doesn't, you know, he doesn't get too, like, I'm not talking total abstraction. He actually makes some good points. We'll read that next time. But I think these seven deadly sins are great places to start. I think you choose a villain. You say, okay, I'm going to do a greedy dude. So the mayor is skimming money off the top, and he's paying one of the local friars who's also skimming money from the temple, and they're, you know, socking away the money. And so the characters end up facing off a dude who is all about greed. I don't think you have to do them. You know, you can get more complex motivations, but I think that's definitely a good place to begin.
Right, because when it comes down to it, most motivations can be boiled down to these.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and a lot of these can be boiled down even further.
Yeah.
To, you know, a more simple, maybe one or two.
What about gluttony? So how would you, that's one that, and I think the others are pretty, I don't know, gluttony and sloth. They kind of caused me to pause here. I mean, you can have a drunken or a fat villain that wants to eat, but I mean, I think there has to be something expanded upon more than just the direct definition of that.
Correct. So let's say sloth. Let's take that one first.
Mm-hmm.
You could have someone who's too lazy or couldn't be bothered or mm-hmm. thinks they're above
mm-hmm.
Acquiring things in the normal manner. And they may and they might even be so lazy that they don't steal things themselves or kidnap people themselves. They hire other people to do that for them or trick them into it.
Yeah, they may not be greedy. They may just make their way off the backs of others.
Right.
And then, you know, it could be a slaveholder, right?
Right.
He could be like, I don't want to work, so they're going to work. So yeah. There's your sweet little villain you could put the kibosh on.
Mm-hmm.
Gluttony maybe is just someone who's how would you separate gluttony? It says gluttony, which is usually understood to include drunkenness. So overeater, gluttony. I would say someone that wants a lot of stuff, but that's kind of greed.
Well, they're related. Gluttony and greed are fairly related. So so you could just go on the greed.
Yeah, and, I'm just trying to think if I could do a gluttonous. You know, well, obviously, here's the default one. Ghouls.
Yeah, I was going to say, or cannibals.
Yeah, what if you had a cannibal, a family of cannibals? I'm thinking like that Pathfinder, Rise of the Rune Lord, those ogres that were kind of hillbilly ogres. They were mm-hmm, disgusting, mm-hmm. And they were gluttonous. And then there's some that were ghoulish, too. I mean, if you eat enough, you could clearly become a ghoul lord or something like that. Yeah, I could see that becoming a theme as to why a villain is the way they are.
Right, and there are old-timey myths which gluttony can lead to be gluttony can lead you to be or how does this work? I remember hearing about a Native American legend.
Mm-hmm.
Where it wasn't gluttony so much, but
it's cannibalism, the Wendigo?
Cannibalism.
Wendigo story?
It may have been the Wendigo story. And two Indians were caught in a cave in the wintertime, and one ate the other
right.
and was cursed to become the Wendigo, I think right. is how it goes.
And then, so he went from being a cannibal because he was desperate to eat to where he was always wanting to even get gluttonous for flesh. Yeah, I've heard some variant of that before.
And I think it has some, the story has some utility as well. We shouldn't mm-hmm. just think of each other as bag of meat.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And maybe evil does. Evil doesn't care.
Right, right.
I mean, that's true. That's a,
you're just another resource to me.
Correct. So when you think about this as a DM, whenever you portray evil, and I had several websites I was looking at, and I settled on this one, which is based on how to write different types of villains. And I got these archetypes, and I kind of thought we'd go back and forth describing them and see if we could maybe play off and think how a D&D villain would work like this. So I'll start with the first one. This is just, and there are some websites that give you 15 archetypes. I think this one has, let's see, 2, 4, 6, 8 of them. Yeah. But I went with these 8. So the anti-villain, the sympathetic, somewhat justifiable or noble goals. And so their examples in media are the ones I picked were Magneto and Gollum. Magneto was clearly sympathetic because at least in the movies, He was a Jew, I believe, in not Germany, but somewhere. He was oppressed by the Nazis, and he saw the way the Nazis treated the world as mutants eventually being faced with that with the regular humans because of the Mutant Registration Act. And so you could, like, you could get it. Like, dude, I get it, man. I mean, you're worried, you've been mistreated, and you're like, you see it coming, you see the writing on the wall. And he's kind of right, but he still has to be a hero. You have to rise above that. Magneto did not.
No.
And Gollum is someone who, he's sympathetic until you really know his tale.
And right. Realize, he plays the sympathetic card so that he can get close. They make it, I don't remember the struggle that he had in the movie being that much of a struggle in the books. So,
because the movie played. Where the movie played it, especially the time, I want to say the second movie, when they were calling him Schmeagol, I thought it was fascinating how, you know, it was watching, you know, what did Gandalf say to Frodo in Mordor? The something of Bilbo, the mercy of Bilbo would determine the fates of many. And so Gollum, you know, when you see him, when he has some truly... I don't want to say cogent, but lucid moments where he's within control of his faculties. So I think most of the time he's just driven by the ring. He's been driven mad. And when you see him, he looks so torn inside that there's at least a part of him, I would like to think, that is sorry that he murdered his cousin Deagle at the river to get the ring initially, but not enough to have stopped him from wearing it. At least in the movie, I get that feeling. So that's why I labeled him as sympathetic. Some may disagree who've read the books much more thoroughly than I have. So you might be right.
And just like with Magneto in the X-Men movies is somewhat a different take than the Magneto of the comic book, especially the older versions of Magneto. I don't know if he's specifically... I'm pretty sure I remember him having a different name than Eric Lyncher. Magneto early on.
Right. Eric sounds right. Erik. I mean, I was an X-Man dude, but it was a while. It's been a while back since I can remember. I think Lyncher might be his name, but I'm not sure. And I know in the comics, Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver were his children. So
yeah,
I think they kind of played that in some of them. But yeah, so what about a D&D villain? A D&D anti-villain. Can you think of one? I have kind of an idea, but can you think of one that you've either seen or played where you thought the villain in a game was truly an anti-villain? He had a motivation you could have some sympathy for.
Strahd.
Really?
Yeah, he has the classic Dracula sympathy of...
he loves this woman.
Right. And part of the reason he's cursed is because of he loved her too much, and I think he murdered her.
Well, if I remember the original story, I believe he killed his brother who was going to marry her, and he thought he would have her, and she threw herself off the top of his tower.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, Strahd maybe. He was pretty possibly. I was thinking that is definitely a possibility. I'm trying to think.
He's not a good person.
No.
He's a vampire, and he's a monster, and should be destroyed. But part of his background can make you somewhat sympathetic to him. Right. It's not like there's not a whole lot of villains that I can think of that.
I'm trying to think in standard D&D stories that we're probably missing one who has. There's not really.
Are you meaning like the D&D novels? I didn't read a whole lot.
Or modules. I'm making modules. Like I'm not. Or even when we play. Like I can think of one that I can make up. Like I'm thinking of somebody that. I imagine a place a local lord controlling an area in the Dark Sun world where it's all desert, and he makes a pact with a dark power to be able to grow food for his people. You know, he makes that pact, and that pact is that, you know, that every seventh son is sacrificed to this demon or devil. And so he does that, and he won't let the adventurers stop him because he's going to feed the people. That would be a guy that you could see as a noble one. That's something I made up. I was trying to think if there's something more in. I'm sure there are. I'm sure I'm forgetting one. I'm sure there's been several that were sympathetic.
Right. So I'm thinking of these because of what we're probably going to be talking about in our negative material plane. But in the Domains of Dread, one of the Dread Lords was like a Frankenstein monster.
Yes, Victor Mordenheim. Yeah.
Right. the original character he's based off of, the creature, mm-hmm. very sympathetic.
Yes.
Because
he didn't ask to be made.
He didn't ask to be made. He tried to be good for these folks. They saw him. He was so ugly and horrifying to them that it's a little bit contrived to say he went from being a really good guy to being a really evil guy, kind of at the drop of a hat.
Was it a movie where he accidentally killed a girl, a villager girl that was friends with him? Is that a movie?
Right, it's a movie thing. That's not a book thing.
Didn't happen.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's the kind of character that would be the anti-villain, at least at some point in his trajectory.
Correct.
After a while, he's just pure villain.
Yeah, I think it's always good when, you know, and I don't do this often, but I have sometimes tried to have villains that would be at least a little bit sympathetic.
Well, it's hard to pull off in a game setting.
It is, but I think it can be.
How much of the background are you going to learn unless you find like a journal or you have interactions with NPCs that know the fella or whatever?
Because probably, let's take my example. I'm sorry, I'm interrupting you. Go ahead.
No. I'm done.
So like, take my example with the Lord or Mayor in the Dark Sun world of Athos. The adventurers roll in probably when the villagers are, you know, holy crap, this little town is growing corn and tomatoes and stuff, and they have lush land, you know, for like, you know, a few dozen maybe acres of land that's growing food, and you're like, what the heck? And they invite you to a feast, and the mayor's giving, you know, food away, and of course they have soldiers, and he tells you I would probably do something like have him like send you on a quest to stop somebody who's attacking them to steal their food, and you'd be like, oh, that's pretty cool. And at some point at a party, you know, some character, maybe your character, breaks away, gets in his library, and finds this pact he's made. You've noticed some symbol, and you're like, holy crap, he's up to no good. So you guys be like, I could almost see some characters be like, oh, you're up to no good, we're gonna stop you, especially if you find out deep underneath his small keep, he's got an altar where there's blood all over it, and there's like four bodies of young children that have been sacrificed to this dark force.
Right.
You know, I'm tired of you, blah, blah, blah. And he may or may not have a chance to tell you why he's done it. And even if he does, it may be too late to be able to have any kind of sympathy for him. But you might. It might happen.
Having a sympathetic villain is a much better... It's much better portrayed in novels and movies and such.
Absolutely. It's easier because you can give the background to the people watching.
Unless we're wrong.
Huh?
Unless we're wrong. And anybody listening is welcome to call in.
Yes. And
fill in the gaps.
Help us
our
out.
Brains.
Yes, because we have major gaps. what's the next one, Joe?
The next one is the Beast. Can't be reasoned with. Monstrous. For example, Jaws or Alien. The Tarrasque. That's easy. Yep.
Easy. The Tarrasque. Yeah, he's just...
The Tarrasque is a mindless, crushing, destructive force.
Many aberrations.
Yeah.
Many aberrations. Like, you know, the Nothic. You know, he's just there to kill. Although they're not stupid, they're just going to murder things.
I'm not familiar with that one.
That's the dude with the one eye. He's kind of new since, I think, 4E, but he's been... I think he was in 3E. How about this one? What's that... one creature that's got claws. I want to say the Chult. It's not called the Chult. The Chul. C-H-U-U-L. C-H-U-U-L. And it's got a kind of like a crab type thing, but it's kind of mindless. Or the Adiug.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's just, you can't reason with it. And, yeah, Aliens and Jaws, I think, are good examples. But, yeah, that's easy. That's a pretty easy. D&D is built for that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, just your mindless destructor.
Orcs.
Orcs. Read Joe's article.
Yes.
The Bully. Straightforward opposition to the protagonist, just simply against them. Meaning, you know, they were kind of written in the story to be the foil. I have Draco Malfoy for Harry Potter.
Mm-hmm.
And I have Mr. Potter from It's a Wonderful Life. He was clearly a douchebag.
Oh, Mr. Potter, the banker.
Yeah, the banker.
Yeah.
So we're playing. I'll pull that out of left field. I want to give you something a little bit different. That's easy. Just, you know, like, you know, in our game in Savage Worlds, mm-hmm. Cord, your ranger dude, he's got an enemy. Mm-hmm. He's got a guy he's hunting down, a serial killer, who is going to be a dude that's just going to try to kill Joe when he gets a chance. He's not going to like you. You've almost caught him once. I mean, that's the background. And so, you know, you guys, he's going to be a foil for you at some point. Who knows? Maybe Monday. We'll see. So
I hope we do.
Yeah.
I might pull, interrupt the DM and say I shoot him in the face.
Right. Oh, okay.
But you might turn the tables on me and say, Joe, there's an arrow coming for your face. What do you do?
That's true. Yeah, so the bully type character, there's one that we have already kind of potentially in our game, kind of the opposite of the hero, the enemy, the guy that is just the opposite of him, kind of a lot like him. I actually envision this guy you're hunting a lot like you. Very rangerish, very sneaky and skilled.
Very
skilled kind of guy.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Also, how about Biff?
That's definitely Bully.
Biff. From Back to the Future. That's a hardcore bully. Yeah. He was just against Marty from every way he turned. He was against him. So, yeah, that's cool. All right.
The machine, technological construct, Gollum, for example. We already talked about Frankenstein.
Yep.
This same kind of deal. Mm-hmm. And Terminator. Definitely.
Yeah, Unthinking. I think constructs. I tell you something that was really cool, though. They're kind of still got a mind to them. Remember there's an article I want to say in 3-5 Dragon magazine, the physical copy back in the day when they still had it, called the Sheen, Shen. They were machine type creatures that landed on this, fantasy world and attempt to take it over. That could definitely be that case. But I think any kind of clockwork structure, animated object, things like that are unthinking. They're programmed. And can they make a good villain though by themselves? Probably. You'd have, but to if unthinking is part of it, then we have a problem with a good villain, right?
Right. The they could be acting on a program, or be so alien that you just don't understand them. I know we had Alien in the Beast. But there might be just a different take on that. Right. You remember, Logan's Run.
Yes.
Okay. As they're trying to escape, they run into an android or robot that prepares food.
Okay.
And it, I don't remember that. I think he's one of their last obstacles.
Okay.
And it freeze its job was to freeze fish and put it in a freezer. It doesn't really cook or anything, but its job was to accept fish, freeze them, throw them in a freezer. Well, it never gets food. That's not the right way to say it. It had a big pause. And what you found out is as people were running in Logan's Run to escape being killed, it thought, because it was stopped getting fish, that the people were the ones it was supposed to freeze.
Oh, okay.
So they had to, defeat it to escape. So a villain, like a arch villain or some nemesis, it's not really suited to that. But but it could be, you could probably riff off of that in D&D in some kind of way, like with a golem or... Yeah. Some other sort of a clockwork creature like you're talking about. What about like a Modron?
Oh, yeah, that's a good call. 2E, the Modrons were the creatures from Mechanus, the plane of ultimate law. Yeah, they behave in ways that throw people off. Mm-hmm. In fact, when a Modron starts acting with its own mind, it's considered a rogue Modron. Mm-hmm. And it's usually run off or destroyed, either leaves Mechanus or it's run off and destroyed. And in the late day stages of 2E, you could play a Modron. I think in either 5E or 3E, there was a rogue Modron race you could play where you're a Modron that doesn't follow the hive mind. So that would, dang, there you go. So Primus, their ultimate leader, could be some pentadrone, one of the higher level Modrons could be a foe because maybe what they're doing is maybe your world is so many factions. Imagine a city where there's so many factions buying, and this pentadrone has come and he's lived there for some reason, or I'm picking a pentadrone, pick a high up one, whatever one is, and he's like, this place is chaotic, I gotta bring order to this place. And so he starts hammering down on the factions and basically end up killing people that aren't bad. The next thing he becomes a foe, and he's just following this plan to make everybody follow the law, create the law, do this, do that.
It could even be something like the Modrons, from what I remember, they only have so much contact with their higher-ups and their lowers, right? They don't But within that, they just follow a program. So mm-hmm. it could be that a set of them mm-hmm. were stranded on a prime world.
Right.
But they had some kind of mission. Mm-hmm. And like that robot in Logan's Run, mm-hmm. it could be that their mission, they now understand it to mean, because they have to keep going.
Yeah, and they have to find some way to make sense of what's my mission now? What am I trying to do here?
Right.
And so they piece it together, though it's not right.
So until we get contact with our higher-ups, we're going to kidnap mm-hmm. people mm-hmm. for whatever reason. Yeah. Maybe they're just on a reconnaissance mission or whatever. Well, and we're going to kidnap these people and question them, and sometimes they aren't very forthcoming with information, so we might have to slap them around a little bit to get them to talk or whatever.
Speaking of that, what's funny is, this on a side note, remember the Black Blades campaign, My Kingdom of Cormon at CabinCon?
Yes.
There was a leader of a town called the Octon. That was his title.
Octon, yeah.
He was actually an Octon from Mechanus.
Oh,
he had learned to shape change his body to be a human. If you recall, we never got to explore it, but the town, he was always adding laws to the town.
Yeah.
And his laws would change. He was a rogue Octon. He was really a high level Modron, but he had taken human form to be acceptable, and he was super lawful, and he had all these rules that you had to follow within the city, and then they would change. So that was his chaotic influence. He would change, 10 rules, which would change everything.
Right.
So, but he wasn't overly oppressive, but he would, one day you can't cross the street from left to right, only from right to left. So, I mean, it's weird stuff like that, but yeah. So yeah, I think that could be a fun. I'm thinking something else a little wilder. Imagine a dungeon that a high level wizard creates, and he builds a construct that blocks all the exits, or can be it's somehow sentient, and it can catch adventurers as they attempt to leave and replace them back into the center of the dungeon. That would be awesome.
We won the dungeon.
Yeah.
On your way out?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you didn't actually win.
All right, the next one, Evil Incarnate. This is easy to play. Easy for D&D. Personifies evil and stands for all things the protagonist does not. I picked, of course, the Joker. He is the opposite of the Batman. Sauron. I think that Evil Incarnate from Lord of the Rings.
Right. This one's easy too. Demons yeah. and devils.
Demon Lord's being summoned. Mm-hmm. They're going to try to summon Orcus to the plane. We must stop the ritual. We must kill the cultists. We must ruin the cool book that's going to summon him or whatever. Yep.
Yep. The chromatic dragons. Blue, green, red.
Mm-hmm.
Although they could be the next one too.
Yeah. True. Yeah, I think that's pretty easy. What is the next
one? The mastermind opposes the protagonist by overseeing a brilliant, diabolical master plan. They are a gifted schemer and evil genius who attempts to defeat the protagonist mentally as opposed to physically. Right. For example, Hans Gruber or Lex Luthor. In fact, Hans Gruber, when he tried to get physical, he kind of got punked at the end.
Yeah, he got his butt handed to him.
Yeah.
By John's wife, even. Didn't she punch him in the nose?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. So, and yes, Lex can't hold his own against hero type. Lex Luthor can't hold his own in the melee.
No. He has other people do that.
Mm-hmm.
He makes all the plans.
I did that in Elysium, dude.
Oh, yeah.
Remember my Thane?
Yeah.
The one your Butch is after.
Oh, boy.
Dude, he is not a tough dude, but he is like all about plans and, dropping banshees in somebody's guild. That was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Fun times, right, Joe?
Mm-hmm.
You still haven't caught that SOB.
Yeah, we have to do something about that.
Yeah.
I would really like us to get to that and to get the my Butch's creator.
Oh, that too. Yeah, that'd be a really high level sort of approach.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he was created by an Avat.
And that's a mastermind, isn't it? Wouldn't you call him a mastermind?
Absolutely. Kind of definitely an evil genius.
Evil genius. Sure. He creates, basically, he grows slaves in Avat and sells them to people.
Beauregard Highgarden.
Yeah.
That's the one that Butch hates right now. That's my villain that almost brought down the brethren with a sweet little box of Banshee holding.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that nice?
Mm-hmm. Okay, the next one, the Fanatic. Driven by extreme ideology, propelled by a religion or faith or twisted moral belief. I picked Thanos and General Zod. General Zod believes he's better than people. He believes he needs to come, and he's going to control the world, and he's going to take care of them because he's better. They're simply better, and you're cattle. And Thanos believes the universe is overpopulated. He has this zealotry. That's a classic. That's a pretty hardcore thing. That's how it ran through the movies anyway. And so he used the Infinity Gauntlet to kill half the people in the multiverse or universe or whatever. That's definitely zealotry. Both of them are, zealots. Zod for the way of life of Krypton.
Yeah. Anti-paladins could probably fall into this.
Easily.
What's the one from Dragonlance?
Lord Soth.
Yeah.
Yeah. He became a Death Knight even.
Yeah.
Where would you think of? I think even a self-righteous paladin who ends up turning evil, even though he thinks he's doing good. Mm-hmm. You know, he's being so strict on order, he's killing people for the slightest infraction or sin. You know, based upon a code that could even be considered, something even in the real world. The some of the Crusades were pretty hardcore. Some of the Inquisition was pretty hardcore.
Who were those monk wizards in Greyhawk? They were in a cult.
Scarlet Brotherhood.
Scarlet Brotherhood.
They were monks and wizards, and they worshiped devils. They had pacts with devils. Now, they were bad news.
They were zealots.
They were zealots, and they infiltrated different societies and cities in the world. Greyhawk, yeah.
All right, the Henchmen.
Yep.
Functionally the villain's sidekick, and those who do his dirty work without the brains and or raw power of the villain.
Right. So they may not be dumb, but they're not both. Because the main villain could be super smart and tough, or this guy might be one or the other, but he's not the villain. He's not the head dude.
Right, like Count Rugen.
Mm-hmm.
He was kind of an evil genius.
He was, but he wasn't physically tough. I mean, no.
He was. I think he was actually. It's just the one dude was better than him.
Inigo was a lot better than him.
Right, Inigo was a lot better than him, and he. He usually relied on tough guys, so
I imagine he's not that great with the sword.
Right.
I imagine he struck me as slightly competent. We're talking about the Princess Bride,
right.
And Count Reuben, the six-fingered man. So,
right.
Yeah, just my interpretation. Maybe he doesn't fit there. I thought he would fit there. Well, he was definitely what's-his-face's henchman.
Yes.
Prince
Humperdinck. He did his bidding. Yep. Okay, this is one, and I didn't look it up, so sue me.
Yeah.
Lurtz? I can't remember who that was.
He was the big, the first of the Uruk-hai, the leader Uruk-hai that shot. Killed Boromir.
Yeah.
Okay. He was Saruman's lackey.
Mm-hmm.
But the last one.
Clarence Boddicker from
RoboCop. Remember him from RoboCop?
Okay, Clarence.
He was not the main guy. He was the one where RoboCop had him in that warehouse and was beating the crap out of him. He goes, "Stop! You need to arrest me. I'm not arresting you anymore."
Yeah,
that was awesome.
he was an excellent henchman.
Yes, he was. That actor was super good. So yeah, it's always good to have good henchmen, good second in commands. And sometimes I've had groups that hated the main henchman more than the villain.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was always like causing them no small amount of trouble. And I'm like, I'm going to kill that dude. And they loved him when they finally got. It's great when you finally get to kick his teeth in, the lieutenant. And then, because that who's coming next is the big bad guy.
Right.
So, yeah. This is a question. I just brought this up. I'm not sure if we can do this. Which deadly sins that we mentioned in the first part do you think map onto the villain archetypes, if any?
Well, overlap some.
I think so too. I don't think they're perfect.
So, right. There's it's a mixture. It's not like Magneto. Magneto has pride.
Yep.
Open wrath.
Pride. Yep.
I would say those are the two main.
Yeah, those two big ones.
Often, Sloth isn't maybe precise, but he often sent people to do his dirty work for him.
Yeah. Malfoy has envy.
Yes. Mm-hmm. He has Potter envy.
Yes, he does. Harry Potter envy. Yeah.
And I would say a healthy amount of greed, pride. Mm-hmm. I don't know about the rest.
Where does the Joker fit? Maybe gluttony in terms of he couldn't get enough chaos. If you look at the Dark Knight Returns Joker versus some of the Jokers in the comic books, some of the early Jokers like Cesar Romero, he was greedy. He was bankrupt.
And then there might be wrath in there.
Mm. I think wrath could fit the Joker, even though
because he's mad because he's alive.
Yeah, he wants to watch the world. Well, like the guy said in the movie, the Alfred guy said, some people just want to watch the world burn.
Right,
and that comes from wrath. I mean, it's got to be just anger.
He doesn't have enough. He doesn't want to live. He's mad at the universe for his existence, but he's mm-hmm. not willing to take his own life.
No.
So he's rationalized it into causing the pain for others. Right.
I think, you know, and like the Bible itself mentions this, that, you know, that, make sure I'm getting this right. It said is there a quote that the love of money is the root of all evil?
Yes.
But there's also others that pride is a big theme in the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
Pride kind of comes from a lot of things. I see a lot of villains in here. Pride would fit a lot of them.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. I honestly think that's some of the problems that we have as people, our own pride, even things that don't seem obvious, we get too proud. And I mean, I'm guilty of it too. I even said it earlier on. I think I get a little holier than thou and preachy when I should just realize it's the foibles of mankind. It's not the person. So.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Yep. But I think it's useful. And I think maybe I really don't remember where this idea comes from, except for the topic.
Right.
Came from, except maybe I was listening to another podcast and it is just something that occurred to me.
Yeah. But well, I think it's good to know the motivations.
It makes it easier for you to, as a DM, to probably run your villain, even if it's not role playing them at the moment, but running them, especially like a mastermind or evil genius of that kind, you know what their motivations are, and you can come up with scenarios probably a little easier.
Right. And we're not talking now. I would never want to play. And to me, because we're connecting these to what I consider are clearly evil. I mean, almost everyone would agree these things are evil. And, you know, Christian or not, it doesn't matter. But I was like, why would you want to play a character like that? Even though I would say plenty of adventurers could have the deadly sin of pride. You could easily get that.
Yep.
I mean, I would say Butch has it.
Oh, definitely.
He's way confident in everything he does. He thinks his poop does not stink when it comes to fighting. Right. He's mostly right.
But yeah, pride, pretty much that's it, I think, for him. A little bit of the other things mixed in, like everybody. None of us are free of these things.
No.
But these are just tools to help play the villains. This isn't. I mean, you can, if you want, I suppose. Use this as a way to play an evil campaign with evil characters if you would want that. But
right, if you would. I have no interest in that at all.
No.
You think it's okay to use these sort of simple cliched villains or villainous plots to engage the PCs or motivate
them? It's a lot easier to get them engaged, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yep, it makes them like, oh, crap, I want to stop this dude.
I mean, with Beauregard, right?
Yeah.
Butch is not the most heroic character I've ever played or anybody's ever played.
Right.
But that dude is so evil. He's screwed over Butch's friends. He's caused a lot of people's death. Butch doesn't feel an ounce of guilt
for anything he's done.
No. Butch will have no ounce of guilt for chopping his head off.
Right. I know. As soon as you get him in a room, the fight's on. Ain't going to be no talky talk.
No. No monologue.
Yeah. If he monologues, it's his butt.
If I have to, I'll. If Butch has to, he will pick up one of the other player characters and throw him at him.
The only thing I'm going to do, I'm hoping at some point I can have you on one side of a wall of force and him on another. And he has a moment to monologue. That would be funny. You have to admit that would be good.
That would
Luke
be.
Would, Butch would be like Darth Maul in that scene in what was the Phantom Menace. He'd be pacing back and forth until the wall turned, like testing it and smacking his sword. And then
well, that would depending on which version of Wall of Force, which version of the game we're playing at the time. Yeah. I don't know if fifth edition Wall of Force is like other editions.
It would get beat
do
down.
Enough, we could beat it down earlier. Did they do it in third edition or was it?
I feel like third edition, you could damage it. Maybe right. not. Though.
Before not sure. It was just impossible yeah, without certain spells.
Other you couldn't teleport a dimension door. You couldn't get past a Wall of Force.
Right.
Or go ethereal. Actually, I think Wall of Force would stop ethereal travel in a while.
As long as you're in a sphere.
Ah.
Not a plane, but a sphere. Mm-hmm. Right.
Because you can go through the wall.
Yeah. Right.
So you had things like kidnap children, burn the village, assassinate the mayor, duke, or king, rob the local temple, or animate the entire cemetery. I mean, I think villains that are just intrinsically evil are so much easier to wrap your mind around as a player, and it's less stressful to like, oh, he's not fully evil. And I get some people like games that are a little more complicated, and they like to have characters where one couple characters have a little more sympathy toward the villain. And I like to have a villain has some sympathy, especially something like that mayor trying to help the people, especially if he's repentant. If he's like, man, I wish I'd never done this. Can you please help me? I'm in deep doo-doo. When I die, my soul is going to the abyss. Can you help me break this contract and save the people from this horrible fate that I've inflicted on them? And after you do, I'll happily turn myself in and you guys can do whatever you have to do to me.
I mean, right. And you could even see like animating a cemetery. So especially if it's your hometown,
mm-hmm.
mother, your grandmother, your sister, or any family members of the party members.
Yep.
Have now been animated, especially right. if the culture there is anything like any modern day culture where the cemetery is sacred, not just another place.
Right.
It's sacred. So right. if someone desecrates the cemetery and then animates the dead bodies in there, you could make it to where it was somebody. There's a force coming to destroy the village. Mm-hmm. And he makes a pact with some dark lord,
mm-hmm.
and he gives him the ability to do that. And he feels like he's going to save the village,
right? You
know, the living people,
right?
So he's doing it perhaps out of a good intention,
mm-hmm.
but once the deal is done, maybe the deal drives him bonkers, and now he's a maniac who has. Right. A zombie horde.
Right.
Right. And maybe the bandits get killed.
Right.
But then there's a maniac with a horde of zombies and skeletons that now you need to go deal with.
Right. Yep.
So.
And I think it's easier in terms of motivations of an evil, you know, where you can sometimes you just want a simple villain.
Yeah.
Can we just kick the crap out of the villain? Do we have to think about how he was raised and if he was abused or something? You know, can't we just kill him because he's evil, you know, that makes the game sometimes a little simpler. And for some folks, that's too simple. They're not into that anymore. It's too easy. But D&D is full of that. You got a lot of wicked monsters and monstrous beasts, you know, the beast template or archetype. I mean, that's all over the place. It's bog standard. I would say this, and this will lead a little bit into our negative material plane too, but I do kind of agree with that. I think I'm inclined to avoid detailed descriptions of acts of extreme or grotesque evil.
Oh, sure.
So things like, you know, yes. rape, child abuse, twisted body horror. Do you need the X card? Because we're going to talk a little bit about that in the negative material plane.
I don't.
No, I don't think so either. But I think it's I think at least to here, if you're going to run a truly horrific game where you're going to have villains do heinous things, you're going to go Book of Vile Darkness. You probably want to make sure your players are down with that.
Right. So
I'm not either, going to do that.
Yeah.
But I mean, I would go so far as say you come into that guy's, you find his secret door, the mayor guy in the Dark Sun world. You go down there and you find blood all over the altar and four child-sized caskets. That's probably as far as I would go.
Right.
Right. You know, but and I guess some people could bother them. I'm with you. I think with your friends, the X card's not needed. You'll know.
It's not necessarily needed with us. Right. With yeah. you know, you and I and our extended group of gaming friends, mm-hmm. we don't need that.
But I
think we've gamed together for
yeah.
me and you for 40 years.
Some of us 15, 20 years here.
So we know each other. But if you're gaming online, it's new people.
Yeah.
And you need maybe. To have an understanding. I don't know X card one way or the other.
I don't know. I just think some
understanding. If yeah. you understand each other, then the X card is irrelevant. If
I think so.
If you just, you know, meet up, roll dice, and then you start doing this kind of stuff and someone says, "Hey, that's fair." That's fair.
Yeah, that is fair. I don't want to yeah. see you raping people.
Right.
Not you, but, you know, the DM describing yeah. rape or saying, yeah, let's not do that. Yeah. Or, you know, I don't need this kind of gross hip people growing multiple arms out of their hip and 3 and 4 faces. But to me, that's not a big deal. But, you know, somebody bothers some others.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I think really generic evil, some of these basic templates are worthwhile early on in a campaign. Until you know what makes the PCs tick. This is something yeah. I do a lot of times. Make these basic villains so you can find out what they do. And I might just be role-playing them and have them say or do something that really maybe pisses Joe off or makes Debbie like, "Oh, that SOB, we got to take him out." And then I'm like, "Oh, so that makes Joe's character really mad. Okay, let me write that down for the big villain.
Right,
that might
right.
be his thing. Joe hates slavery. Okay, this dude's a slaver. So I want you. Yeah, I want you to hate my villain. I want you to be like one to kick his
yeah. feet." The easiest way for you when I'm playing a heroic character to get mm-hmm. me engaged with the villain mm-hmm. is for that villain to hurt defenseless people, women, oh. children, old people, or right. have slaves. I mean, just have them.
You just have them.
I'm going to, okay, I'm against you completely.
Right. Right. And I know it's just the person, and Debbie has things too, like, you know, an abuse, a guy's an
sure,
abuse of
sure.
women and stuff. She's like,
right. And yeah. That's easy.
Yeah.
Those ideas are non-trivial. I mean, yeah. No. Opposite. Those are not controversial.
Controversial. Yeah.
It's not controversial to be against slavery. So, yeah.
But there's nothing wrong with having some guys that it is fun sometimes to throw a little twist in there where the guy's not that blatantly obvious.
Yes.
And I think the villain, at a bare minimum, he needs to have some buffers between him and the characters so he can do his dastardly stuff and they can just observe and go, "Oh, I want to get that dude."
Right.
Anything else you wanted to add about what evil is, what it does? I hadn't thought much more beyond that.
No, I think we hit the highlights. It's not that complicated, but it's good to have an idea of what motivates your villains.
Yep.
So it's easier to portray them for the players and easier for you to have stuff prepared that they're doing.
Well, and I think even without reading about these different archetypes, I think I drew on them anyway, just from years of reading comics, reading books, and D&D, you start to just build these type of villains, some more or less complicated than others. So yeah, that's true. So, all right. Okay, well, let's switch over to a full little cabin con moment. And I want to talk about a couple of things. First, I want to talk about the post. This is not the right word. Post cabin con, I said sadness. And sadness isn't the word, but it's kind of like, oh man, it's over.
Yes.
You know, I was tired last week, but now that I'm not tired, I'm kind of like, oh man, that was really cool. I kind of wish I was doing it again next week. And by kind of, I totally wish I was.
Right. And after hearing a few things on the interwebs, I really wish we could do this more and then post more pictures of what we're doing.
Yes. And next year, maybe we'll do better. I mean, I haven't looked at our videos yet, but I know I felt it was strange. Didn't you feel I felt a little weird in front of the camera, which I shouldn't because I'm in front of the camera now.
Yeah, it's different, though. Someone's film or recording mm-hmm. you instead of you doing it yourself. You're in a room by yourself. I mean, you're looking at me, and who wouldn't want to do that? Maybe that's what it is. That's probably what it is. Because we're sitting next to each other.
Your beauty relaxes me, so I know that I can be myself. But
yeah, it's different. I felt the same way. The very first one, if you look at my face, I look like a robot.
I felt very stiff, too. And you folks who watch it, you'll see it. We're, you know, our great producer, Patrick, out there, he must have been like, "Come on, emote." He's a theater guy, so he's probably like, "Be yourself, act natural." You know, and he was giving the hand signals behind the camera, and I was kind of like,
"I think that's what I was." So I was distracted with that, so mm-hmm. I was looking at him. Okay, tell me what to do. Tell me what to do.
I gotta watch. Have you watched them? You've watched them.
A little bit, yeah.
I'm gonna watch them. Watch them all. I'll probably cringe, but
the second one, the audio is really crappy.
Okay, well, hopefully, folks, will get better. I mean, it is what it is.
Of the second video, even though the audio was crappy, we were more natural. The third one, we looked dead tired, both of us.
That's because we were old and we shouldn't stay up till 2 a.m.
Which is what we did. And then got up. What time did we get up and play the next game?
I was playing by 10:30, so I know I was up by 8.
Yeah, we were up early. I was surprised to see you were. I figured we'd have to roll you out of bed.
Nah, dude. Morning comes, I'm usually rejuvenated, but yeah. So I've been thinking about another thing, now that it's over, about next year. And a couple of things. One of them is that you mentioned idea of a cabin con swap meet, or you call it the blanket barter. I really like that idea. I hope we can, bring – so that, have you thought about any more about how that would work? Do you just bring stuff and put it on the blanket and then you bid for it?
All right. So everybody brings something. Mm-hmm. And then I didn't look it up.
Okay. We got plenty of time.
We got plenty of time. But there's a method for figuring out who goes first. It might just be whoever the host is of whatever shindig you're doing.
So, kind of like the white elephant gift exchange at Christmas.
Yeah, kind of. So the host goes first, throws something on the blanket, and says, "This is what I got. What do you got for me?" So it's just a trade. It's not like you say, "I've got this thing." So let's say you had a first edition monster manual, right? Mm-hmm. Here's a first edition monster manual. What do you got for me? You don't say, "I want X or $20." Nothing like that. You put it there, and someone says, "Oh, I'd like that. I have this. What is that? A good trade?" And
then, I say trade, swap me.
Right. And then it goes around, because you're in a circle. The blanket is in the middle, and then you throw the thing down, and it just goes around.
And I'm really pretty pumped about the workshop ideas. I mean, the two we mentioned, Dungeon Mastery, where I'm probably going to try to do that one, where I teach, give some hints on DMing, like I'm some expert or something, and then teach a game. I don't know what we'll call it, but I would love for someone to bring a game that I'm interested in and then say, "We're not just going to play," because that can work. That's cool. But I also wouldn't mind them just saying, "Look, here's a character. Here's how you make a character. Here's how the rules work. Here's an example character. If we were playing, we roll this and it has this idea. This seems to be the rules as written. This seems to be the rules as intended." I think that would be cool, and bring a game. Like the one I think I would like to do, but I'd like to do one that I've played. So I would lean toward a Savage World. We got a lot of folks who played Savage World. We got a lot of folks who haven't played it. And I wouldn't mind doing a Savage Worlds thing or a D&D white box. We got some folks, I know Ben. Ben really enjoyed my white box game, and I'm going to let him borrow or use that little booklet that I have.
Oh, okay.
Because he says, "I think I could enjoy playing this." And he's not, I think a lot of times he gets, and I don't want to speak out of turn, and Ben can always call in and let us know. I think sometimes he's a little overwhelmed because he's more of a board game guy, and he's happy to play RPGs, but he knows little to nothing about them. So he's gets his exposure at CabinCon, and he really liked it. He goes, "Man, this is simple." He could really grok it. It was just not much to it. You saw the character sheets. They're pretty basic.
Yeah, and that's one of the best things about old school games is they were simple.
Yep.
And they got us all in. And sometimes, like me, I like a little bit more complicated than old D&D.
Yep.
Races class is kind of odd. But it worked at the time. It's basic. Mm-hmm. It gets you into the idea of what a role-playing game is, and then you go from there.
Yeah, and you can play quickly. I mean, 15 minutes, or I made characters, but even if I'd set you guys down and said, "Let's make characters," it really would not have taken us at most 30 minutes. For those that have never played an RPG, you would have had yours made in probably 10.
Yeah.
So it would have been really easy. And even when I passed it around while we were playing, folks were reading it, and they were grokking it immediately because it's super basic. Yeah. One thing I am going to work on, and I'm not going to I think I'm about 85%, 85.63% committed.
Alrighty then.
Hey, math guy. I want to run a game where everyone can participate next year. It doesn't mean I'll be the only one running it, but I want to do some sort of group
game
where we're all playing, and I want it to be at least RPG-like. It may be an RPG. It may just be close to an RPG. It won't be LARPing, but something at the table, rolling dice and fighting stuff.
And so would this be along the lines of not this past, but the one before, where we had multiple tables and multiple DMs?
It could be. That would be an easy solution. Part of me would, there's an idea I have where I would like to have not a DM, but sort of a lead player that when I leave the table, they can have something for the rest of the players to keep doing. Maybe a constant, some sort of influx of combat, basic combat, where this guy keeps track of the initiative, and I say, look, here's the, you know, mooks or whatever you're fighting, something that's unlikely to kill you, but something can give you an objective that you guys can accomplish till I come back. That would be interesting.
How does this sound?
Yeah.
Since we're all going to be together,
mm-hmm.
and we all like eating, how does it sound that we are in either a festival or a tavern as the jumping off point?
Yeah.
And then you could have us all at our places, at our tables, you know, while we're eating. All right, you three right here, as you're eating, you know, your meal has been interrupted by an ogre. What do you do?
Gotcha.
Yeah.
A Thursday night dinner game where we're actually eating while we play.
Yeah.
And then try to, I mean, like I said, I would see how long, it might be a really short game that we play just for 2 hours.
Yeah.
Or if I can figure it out, I might have a really cool scenario. I would love to where everybody can be participating in the same game, even if it has to be three DMs, but ideally it would be, you know, it would be just me orchestrating it, but that can be tricky when you have, you know. And I'd like to be able to, like you inspire me in that idea of a tavern festival and just not tell people, say, sit wherever you want. And I'd probably tell you, I don't know if I'd tell you in advance to bring a character. Probably be better if I just gave you a character and we would just play. So who knows?
And you could probably even have the table set up that whoever sits at this table, this happens. Another thing happens at another table. I mean, they're going to be related, but the ogre smashes through the roof and lands on your table, crushes the table, you do something.
I would like to do it to where, like nobody has to, you don't have to sit like four people at a table, meaning you can have nine people at your table if you want.
Right, right.
I don't care. And three at another table.
Right.
It's just how it's going to be. So that would be interesting.
That would be fun.
It'd be a lot of fun. And did you have any other ideas that's come up to you recently? Have you been spending any time thinking about KevinCon next year?
No, not really. No, I've been thinking about other stuff. Getting the website. I'm trying to. The website kind of looks like poop, so I'm going to try to fix that.
Wipe it away. Yeah.
Yeah.
Clean it. All right. All right. Our next segment. I brought back Beat This Game. Get away from Dick the setting. And I'm going to talk about Swords and Wizardry White Box because that's what we played, and I'm totally pumped about. And there are pros and cons of the game. I thought easy to understand, simple mechanics.
Yes.
Big plus. Kind of offers a return to our youth.
Mm-hmm.
This is, you know, more of a
nostalgia.
I like the D6 group initiative more than I thought I would. But I don't want to say that's, I mean, I also felt the same way when we had individual initiative came into play in third edition. I thought, well, that's really cool. And I think Glenn Hallstrom uses a D10 individual initiative. He has his own system for every game he plays. D10, a 10 is high, or one is the first, and 10 is the best. I don't know how he does it, which is high, which is low. But I mean, that's something simple is cool. Combat was much faster.
Yes. There wasn't that many options, so it had to be faster. We were playing what level? Third.
Third level.
Third. Mm-hmm. So we're third level. So I think third level. Wow. I don't know about Pathfinder, but third level in a lot of games is pretty fast because you don't really have that many options.
I actually think the group initiative made it even faster. I thought the player skill was forefront. I've always said that, but I've heard people say that, but it really was. I mean, because like you said, there's not that many options. People aren't all that different on their probabilities to hit.
Right.
And so your player had to make some smart decisions to do some cool things. And for the session, I like the one single saving throw. I know it's probably not an ideal one, but it was really simple for that game. I think to introduce somebody to role-playing, it's definitely simple.
Yeah.
I was impressed with the elf character, and I was impressed with Race's class. I know you don't like it that much, but I actually liked it. I thought it an elf is an elf is an elf, and I was okay with that. And maybe just because it was a one shot, maybe over a long campaign, I would find that less than ideal.
So, right. I mean, I think it's just a design choice, obviously. But if you as a player or DM like having elves that can do more than be fighter wizards,
which is what you are,
yeah, then you can certainly do it more like first edition D&D, where you had level limits. And then you can throw a bone to them and give them an option where they could be unlimited in everything else. They have limits.
Yeah, so. And you played the elf, and you even admitted,
yeah,
I think surprisingly so, you were one level lower. You didn't feel behind anybody.
No, yeah. The only thing I was behind in, I think, compared to everybody else, was hit points.
Yes, that's a little dangerous.
Yeah.
You were.
I was always floating close to one hit point.
Of course, surprise, surprise. I love the more power in the GM's hands. The rules being wide open just means the GM, I don't know if it's a great, it might be a great game for beginner GMs because it's easy to get into, but you know, I can make it my own. I could add whatever I wanted. And I just, you know, I'd get rules on the fly, make this check, do this check, roll this. I wasn't really worried about it. Now, I think the game probably plays better with an experienced GM, but it probably would be fine for new ones too. We did use the alternate rules for AAC. I know that didn't mean much to you, which is ascending armor class. I did not use Thaco.
Right.
The BHB, I could have simplified it even more. I gave you the little table at the bottom.
Yes.
Different armor classes. And you didn't need it, though, because I could have given you your base hit bonus, BHB, and you could have rolled with that. Didn't miss Thaco or the charts at all. I really didn't.
Really?
Yeah, I have no...
Yeah, the charts.
BHB is more.
I don't know how the old D&D charts compare to the AD&D charts.
Right.
But the AD&D charts have a couple of features that just having a bonus to your roll doesn't have. Like when you get higher level, which, you know, OSR means low level for most people.
For us, it won't.
Right.
No, sir. We're playing high level, son.
Yeah, 15 years from now.
I'm telling you, if I run an OSR campaign, you're probably starting at 7th.
Oh, that's cool. you get a certain level, you start having negative numbers at the low armor class end, and that adds to your damage.
Yeah, which is, we could do whatever. I have not
opposed. And there's some other weird thing at the other end at low level where you had to roll a 20. And have a magic weapon plus one, something like that. Was that?
That might have been.
I'm just remembering that.
It's been too long. Dude.
It's been too long. There's some kind of thing. That might be second edition, but in any event, just having a bonus to hit is simple compared to the chart.
Me too. I think it's more intuitive than a Thaco. I mean, I don't hate Thaco. I can Thaco with the best.
Thaco has a utility in that it keeps the number low.
Yes,
so,
it does.
So it, you don't you need follow. To have large armor class. Mm-hmm. You can have relatively low armor class using a Thaco type setup as opposed to just having a bonus, which you have to plan on your monsters having higher armor classes at the upper end. So you're working with bigger numbers, which is, I don't care.
And also work from Thaco as a DM and not allow bonuses to get out of hand.
Right.
Just not allow it. But and I know in the white box there were no weapons. There was one weapon. The Dwarven Thrower was +3. All other swords were +1.
Yeah.
So, anything other things that you liked about the experience playing with the white box mechanically, or things you thought were cool?
I just thought it was easy to play.
Maybe it's because I'm old. I'm loving that. Mm-hmm. What about?
I like it. I like it. I'm not sure if I have to play it longer.
Right.
Know whether I'm going to like it for a campaign.
Right.
And your face is going dark.
Okay. I'll flip the light on.
Yeah.
Go on.
But what I now I can't remember what I was getting at. I'm thinking Short term, it's great for one shots and small campaigns, especially something like Cabin Con.
Yes.
I'm not sure how I like it as a long term thing, but I don't know. We'll have to see.
I think that's where we can also explore, like, I could do like I did for 13th Age, let you guys play low level one session. Then imagine a few months or years have passed your mid-level, few months of years have passed your lord, few months and years have passed and you guys are 17th level. And just let you play it. I mean, just let you try it and see if it's scratching the itch. If you're like, dude, I don't really like how this plays. And we can always, you know, ramp things up and we can find some of the, what I thought the weaknesses were. And some of the cons, unless you got something else pro to say, I want to move on to the cons. A little bit. I thought, no skills. I don't greatly miss the skills, but I think I would absolutely add. I feel very inspired. I'm not sure who said it at Cabin Con. I would add the backgrounds to 13th Age of this. Yeah,
that's what I keep saying.
Yeah, maybe it was you. I think that's going to be money, and that's going to be plenty. Mm-hmm. I thought the stat modifiers were a little strange and weird to go back. It was 3 to 6 is minus 1, 7 to 14 is 0, and 15 to 18, which 18 is a cap, was plus 1. It did make stats less important, which doesn't fully bother me, but it felt a little – once you get 15, why bother?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right. So, well, no. Well, there's not really anything that you do with your stats that I can think of that would make that matter, unless you had the house rule that a lot of OSR DMs is roll under your stat to do a thing.
Yes, right. I mean, you do get, like, at 15 intelligence, you get a minus 1. People that save against your spells get a minus 1. Same for a cleric with the wisdom thing. It may be a nostalgia thing that I'm feeling the love for it right now. I think it feels incomplete from a modern gaming viewpoint. But that's not – these aren't horrible. I'm not blasting it. Now, I did think movement in ComCat was not clear. I read through there. I still – and I would appreciate any of our listeners, if you can read the Sword and Wizardry white box or let me know, how does movement work? Can a wizard move and cast a spell? I didn't allow it. I said they had to be still. And it talks about how the combat goes, like, I don't know if it's – we did spells, then range. We did movement – then spells, then range or something, and then finally melee.
Phased combat.
And I don't know if movement is just an option. If you move, you have to do this. I let you guys do some movement and attack. I didn't let wizards move and cast spells, because one version of their spell casting was you begin your spell. Your spell has to be – there's one of the versions of initiative or combat you could use, I'm babbling here, where you had to spend a whole round casting a spell. It didn't actually come into effect till the next round. Every spell was like that.
That's because basis of the game was against wizards.
Rumor has it Gygax was not a fan of the wizards, right, and just included them because everybody kind of twisted his arm. I think the spell descriptions, I like the vagueness of it, because I'm happy to tell a wizard that your sweet little spell sucks in my game. It does not any good. Especially if Joe's playing it. I think it does this. No, that's not what they mean, and that's not what I mean. But no, I think the vagary of the spells could be problematic for some tables.
And things that we can make assumptions about them. Like you said, you had one group before earlier in the con cast sleep on the giant rats.
Right.
And it states in the spell description it only works on bipedal creatures.
Yeah.
So that's kind of an early way to make it charm person, or or sleep is only supposed to work on humanoids, and they just described that as bipedal early on.
And charm person was everybody that played the wizard loved charm person, because it was basically fail the save. It says, you know, the way it describes fail the save and you become under the influence of the wizard until the spell is dispelled. What does under the influence mean? Man, Trent went crazy on that. Ben did pretty good with that. I mean, you just basically get you an ally is what you
get. Right.
But I, you notice
do
I tried
you become, to... Do you become alcohol to them?
I guess. Notice I did try to play it off, though, because both of them tried to use them to get them to turn on their bosses, different bosses. You know, in each session, they tried a different, slightly different way. And I made them play it a little more. I mean, I didn't just like, yeah, you were fighting was the henchman to Loreth the Beautiful. Well, Loreth is super powerful. He's not just going to be like, yeah, turn and attack Loreth. No, you're my bud. I advise you this. Why don't, remember, I think I said it to Trent. Why don't you join us? because I'm going to have to kill your friends.
Right.
You know, just because I like you doesn't mean I won't kill your elf buddy over there.
Right. That makes sense.
Yeah. And so that was kind of fun. So any other cons that really come out at you? Do you think you got to play it a little more?
I think I had to play it a little more, but yeah, I think all that stuff is, I agree with the stats. It's all a matter of taste. And of course, that is how the early game played. Stats were less important, but as the hobby progressed, I think more people thought that, and I agree, someone with better stats is likely to be better at things than someone with not as good stats.
Person with a 16 strength is stronger than a person with a 15. Even if it's only minuscule, even if it's only a plus one difference, he's stronger. Yeah,
but the differential between a 6 and an 18 is only 2.
Correct. Right. Which would be
on a roll.
Yeah, it would be much between a 3 and an 18.
A 3 and an 18.
Yeah.
It's 2.
Yeah.
Seems a little weird, but.
The guy with the 3 can barely hold his own shirt up while the other dude's carrying a house while they walk around the.
If you're rolling and adding a bonus or a modifier. If you're rolling under your stat, the 3 is way harder to.
Yes.
Harder to make than the 18.
It could be fun. It'll be fun to play around with that.
Yeah.
So, based on our one experience and our experience in the past, how would you currently rate this white box?
I'm M to an L. I need more time to get anything better than that. Medium, it's okay. I like to play it. Or large, like it. Happy to play a full blown campaign. Not the best system out.
If you'd asked me the day after the game, Cabin Con ended, I'd have said a 2X, but that's not true. I think putting my nostalgia under control, I'm with you a large. I like it. I would be happy to play a full-blown campaign, but I would play it in not vignettes. What would you call it? Like
stages you were talking about earlier?
Yeah, stages and episodic, so your life would progress faster. It wouldn't be about experience points first. It'd be about let's do an adventure when they were low level. Let's do an adventure when they were medium. Let's do an adventure when they're fairly high, when they're lords of kingdoms. Let's do an adventure when they're really high level and something happens when they're in their late 40s. And then let's do something when they're really old and they're super high level and maybe the humans have found some way to live longer or something so that elf can be, 100 years old and they're elves, 16th level and the fighters 10th, 14th level, whatever the max is in the module, and just see how it plays and give them all the goodies and stuff and
right.
See how the game plays.
So would you do that in single sessions each time or would you do that short?
I would say a short scenario. Adventure. Yeah. I prefer a scenario. So it might take us, I'm thinking 4 to 5 stages. So I'm thinking 4 to 5 adventures, probably, 12 to 15 sessions. So it would be considered a small campaign.
Yeah, yeah.
As long as players are willing to realize, keep his character. I'm going to poop him up.
Poop him up
to the next couple of levels. You might go level 3, then go level 6, then level 9, then level 12, and or maybe at level 9, then level, say, 14, the cap level. So probably 4 stages.
Right.
Sessions each stage. Yeah. I'd love to do that. Actually, that's kind of high on my list once we finish the Sanctuary one.
Right. Could you do that kind of like at Camp Cabicon, like we did the comic book one?
Oh, easily. Oh, dude. That's an idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. So a Cabicon campaign where you can play low. I might have to be like, since I did low last time, I might start you guys off at like 5th and then do 9th and then do max level. And just play the same character at 3 different stages.
Right.
And that way, because if I run 3 scenarios like that, I have a chance to give everybody a shot to play it.
Yeah.
Everybody could possibly play every single stage if they wanted to.
Sure.
Experience a campaign. That'd be fun. Yeah. All right. I think it's time for some plug time. But before we do have a long negative material playing. I think it's, well, I don't want to say it's long. I listed a lot of stuff. I'll talk about it more then. But if you don't want to hear us rant, then you might want to shut it off here pretty close. But if you'd like to support our show, please help get the word out. Check out our website at www.biggestgeekestpodcast.com. Is it / support still or has things changed?
Oh, it's still / support if you want to see ways to support us.
But, telling your friends and stuff, keep pushing it out there is the way to go. Check us out on YouTube now as well. Rate us on Apple, iTunes, or other podcatchers. I'd love to see more ratings. It would be great. I think it helps us. We got the Joe's got the Cabin Con videos up. You know, they're not terribly long. And as he said, there's some, we need a lot of work there, but you're going to get to see them. Mm-hmm. Our email is still questions, right? You haven't changed it yet. Questions at Biggest Geekest
Podcast. I'm not.
Going to change it soon, though, aren't you? The Geeks
or something? I believe. Yeah, it's the same. Email is still there. I can't remember if I have added the other one or not.
And questions is just a word we use. Questions at biggestgeekestpodcast.com. Any comments would be fine, or comment on Anchor. We'd love that. And then we have some links to some podcasts that we really, really like. And we'd ask you to check those out as well if you want some good other podcasts. We got a lot of dudes we like out there. So Tinkar and Glenn, one of the other guys. So Jason's got
a Tale of the Manticore.
Tale of the Manticore and Barry. So yeah, check those out. All right. Well, this is Randy.
And this is Joe.
Remember, can't be big like us and be geeks like us. Okay, negative material playing time. So two big topics are Van Richten's Guide to Ravenloft, kind of again, now that it's actually out. I did dub it Ravenwoke, but to be honest with you, it doesn't bother me that much in terms of like You can do whatever they want. But there's things I don't like definitely about it. We're also going to talk about the drow lore being changed. But first, Van Richten's guide. So I searched out. Pretty easy to find. A lot of positive reviews. A lot of folks like it. To Van Richten's Guide to Ravenloft. One from Bell of Lost Souls and from Polygon. Mm-hmm. And you mostly have to search hard to find reviews that are even moderately
critical.
You know, disappointing, critical. Some of the things they said, they said Van Richten's Guide includes an entire chapter on the concept and fully brings tools like the X card into modern D&D by their author, some John Stavropoulos. It has a mantra in Van Richten's Guide. Horror role playing is about scaring the characters, not the players, and every precaution should be taken to make sure that remains the case throughout.
Yeah. Scaring the characters.
Mm-hmm.
Impossible. Okay. Impossible.
Right.
You can play as if your characters are scared.
Right.
But your characters are imaginary pieces of paper.
True.
They cannot be scared.
And I really think, and I've made a statement that I'm not sure D&D is good for horror. And I loved Ravenloft back in the day. And Joe doesn't even like horror that much.
It's boring.
It's boring to him. I think predictable.
I was there are some things that are scary but more in a disturbing way. Mm-hmm. Like Hellraiser.
Yes, very disturbing.
Pinhead. I was telling my wife, I was saying, Pinhead's really scary.
Mm-hmm.
Because he doesn't, there's no remorse, no hesitation. If
truly
he has a hesitation, it's a trick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that kind of villain, that kind of evil, that's scary. Mm-hmm. Some weird-looking creature running around the woods.
Ugh. Yeah. I know. I think the X card we talked before in the body of the podcast, I think it's fine if you want to bring it in at your table. We have zero use for it because we know each other. Mm-hmm. People that play on the internet all the time and are constantly playing with different groups, I guess it's a thing.
Going to cons.
Right. Going to cons is probably required, or at least a good idea to at least discuss those things.
Yeah.
So I don't really care about that. Now, the next one they mentioned they thought was really cool. And again, this is probably just my Christianity showing up. Because I just don't care for this. It says there's even a spirit board in the appendices, an actual spirit board, meaning one set for the Raven. I get it. It's within story. It's meant to be like the tarot deck for Ravenloft. And it says a themed Ouija board that will allow players to run their own seances. And I know they mean within the game, I think, but I'm not inclined to do that. I mean, Patrick's told me it's not really a cultish thing, but I don't know. It's probably just me wanting to, I don't know, I don't want to go down that road. And seances, I don't even want to role play that. Personally.
No. I don't care about Ouija boards or tarot boards. Mm-hmm. They're just cardboard. They're just paper.
Yeah.
They don't do anything. So.
I believe if you have a purpose, express purpose in mind, might aid you to do contact something that you don't want to
call. If that's the case, you don't need them.
Correct. I'm not inclined to do that. And maybe you don't. Maybe you don't. And then the other article was, because it's not just a retread of the past, but rather a world reimagined through a modern lens. And I do agree. I think they've done that. It's just not my favorite thing.
No.
But what you want, and this is actually something I fully agree, is I don't know if it's positive, but I think it's an honest thing. They did it back in second edition, or they didn't do it, but they should have. But what you won't find are many stat blocks for the Dark Lords. In fact, none of them are statted up. Strahd is only statted up. Nope. He is only in his original adventure. But they don't have any stats.
When I first heard this, I thought they meant, because there's the Plane of Dread has folks in charge of it, not the Dark Lords. Right. Correct.
The powers of Ravenloft.
Powers. I thought that's what they were talking about.
No.
They're talking about Strahd. That's weird.
Yeah. Yeah. All the different lords, Arjani, I don't know if he's still there, Harakir, the Lord of Harakir, the mummy dude, Inkotep, all of them, they don't have stats, which, okay, look, I get it on one hand, because in the old rules, well, at least in the original module, I believe there was something about even if you killed Strahd, he comes back.
Yeah, that's what I heard too.
Which feels a little cheesy that you get away with that, but I remember that being the thing, that he would be brought, I think even in the domains
of curse. It's a curse.
Curse that you can't undo, which I think is I don't know. I don't care. I never like that. I don't like it here either. But someone said in one of the articles, well, you know, you shouldn't stat up gods. They're not gods.
No.
We're not even close to gods. I mean, I'm sorry. If you're a super powerful mummy, you're just a super powerful mummy. You're not a deity. And you should be, you know, killable in my mind some way. But
now, some way.
It may be incredibly difficult to permanently put Strahd down. A stake in the heart may not be enough to kill the ultimate vampire. It might just delay him for a while.
Right. Well, I could see, okay, a vampire that's not in the domain of dread, mm-hmm. hard to kill, right? Mm-hmm. You have the right technique, you can put him down.
Yep.
Strahd type, mm-hmm. not in the domain of dread, harder to deal with because he's an iconic vampire, not just a vampire. He's iconic. So you can make him a little tougher.
Yeah.
But in the domain of dread, you could say, you can't permanently kill him unless. So you do what you would normally do with a Strahd type, and you seem to have killed him, but there's some other step you got to figure out. So he comes back, and you're like, crap, what do we got to do?
Yeah.
I could see that being okay. But just simply saying he can't ever be killed at all.
Which seems to be what they're saying.
I mean, I get that from the point of view of being dread, domain of dread, gothic horror. Evil can't be overcome.
Right, not fully.
Right.
And I thought the whole thing about the world reimagined through a modern lens. I don't care for that.
No, why would you want to do that?
If it's going to be gothic horror, you don't reimagine it through a modern lens. It's not modern. It's gothic horror. But that's going to come later on because our good, one of our favorite dudes, Professor DM, one of my favorite dudes, Joe, well, Joe likes him too, but he disagrees with him more than I like him because he's hardcore. And this other guy, Aaron Pedantic, has some different views. Now, to be fair, I found a plethora of yay, go Ravenloft, it's the best book in the universe. Everybody said it. I don't feel that, even after reading those reviews. And those four things I mentioned were just things that I kind of struck me as annoying from those two positive reviews. There's a negative review, which is pretty negative, on YouTube by Aaron Pedantic, where he reviews it. And he's got some very interesting things here. The first one is, changed race and sex of many Dark Lords. And my question is why? I think I know why. Why do you think they did that?
Oh, representation?
Yeah, which is...
diversity, inclusion, and equity, all that crap? Yeah.
Yeah, look, it's a game. It's supposed to be some version of these classic characters. I don't care, but here's what I found annoying. They turned Victor Mordenheim into Victra Mordenheim of Lamordia, is now a female. The friction between the monster and Adam is gone. In the old game, Adam was secretly the Dark Lord of Lamordia, not the Doctor. And now he's gone somewhere. He may be out there somewhere. And she talks about making golem hunters. She's made these golems that hunt for this item called the Unbreakable Heart. I don't know the whole deal, but it seems like it's just, from what I saw, and I haven't done tons of research, but some, it's just a lot of stupid and worthless switching things around.
Change for change's sake.
Yeah, not my favorite.
No.
We talked about the no stats. Aaron mentioned the no stats for Dark Lords. He said why, because his players generally want to kill things that they fight. Mm-hmm. And of course, he referred to this as the Rian Johnson edition of D&D. Rian Johnson being the guy who basically screwed Star Wars up, in my personal opinion. I enjoyed some of the movies, but Last Jedi was ridiculous. And by subverting cliches and expectations. The dreaded subversion, yes.
If you're always subverting expectations, then the new cliche is the subversion of the old cliche.
Correct.
And it's kind of dumb.
Yeah, and he says...
There, you could do a couple. There's no harm in doing it per se, but if that's your whole shtick, then it's kind of stupid.
Yeah, and Aaron made some... He actually read this from the suggestions to the GM in the book. Let me just read these off. Don't draw inspiration from stock characters in fiction or film.
Yeah.
Don't use cliched accents. I've owned Kusak, you're a blood.
Yeah, because that's harmful somehow.
It's really harmful. PC creation rules presuppose no standard bar for heroics. I know you love that one, Joe.
Yeah. Heroism. This is what I said on Twitter when someone brought this up. I said, heroism is a standard. In and of itself.
Yep. It is a standard.
If there's no standard bar for heroics, how can you know what heroics are?
That's correct. And cliches and stock characters. Aaron made a good point. That's our DM's bread and butter. And I think the perfect example is Cabin in the Woods. I love that movie, and it's cliche as heck. In fact, that's part of the fun that they're making at it. But it's like that gets across to everybody. When I say this is the old man that's warning you not to go into the forest, you're like, oh, okay, you all can envision what he's like, and he's some crackpot who's probably telling the truth, but we're doing it anyway because we are boldly going in there because we're cool adventurers. Yeah. And I think
like I said a little earlier, with cliched accents being harmful, there is a real, and that's a, I think that's a real opinion from a lot of these folks who think that if I use an accent, I'm somehow denigrating the accent or the people the accent comes from, especially if it's, I don't know, whatever it could be.
And maybe you could be if that was your point, but that's not what we're doing at the game table. We're trying to get across, this guy sounds like a Romanian. This guy sounds like a Scottish person. I try to do my best Scottish accent, which is horrible, but the Robert would love it. But, you know, okay, so it sucks. I got a crappy accent, but whatever, you know. It's you're doing the best that you can.
Even if you're not?
Yeah.
Who cares what happens at your table?
What if I just said, Strahd sounds like Bela Lugosi? Is that okay? Is that okay?
That's fine. If you don't, it's fine.
I mean, to those people that don't like.
No.
I mean, that's not okay?
It'll be okay to them.
Gosh. Okay.
No. Because, you know, you're still, even though you're not verbalizing it, you're still leaning on cliched old stock character. It's problematic.
Okay. Yeah, to them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, here's one. And this is one that I think I want to think very positively that maybe they mean one thing, but they said it wrong. You should matter of factly provide opportunities for everyone to be exceptional. No. If everyone's exceptional, then no one's exceptional. I want to think what they meant was give everybody a chance to shine in the game, which I agree with, but I don't think that's what I'm not sure what they're saying. They didn't say that. That's not what they're saying.
I don't know.
Maybe there's a subtle difference there that I'm not catching.
I think this, for me, this falls along the lines of the DM is supposed to, that their job is to entertain you and to, instead of, I'm always more fond of the players being assertive. So if you have wallflowers at your table, which is fine if that's how you want to play, I don't care.
Nope.
Let them.
Yeah.
Let them be wallflowers. Who cares? Maybe that's what they want to do. Why should you be compelled or feel that you should do that? Except maybe you could, and maybe it's good for them, but maybe it's not. We have a mutual friend who's played a few times. It's been a long time, 10 years. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And he liked being the wallflower. It was really hard. He liked watching. That's what he liked.
Yeah. Yep.
And he was fine with that.
Yeah.
You should be fine with other people being fine with that. They don't. Yeah. Everybody doesn't need to.
They don't need spotlight. Not everybody needs spotlight.
Right.
But I mean, I'm not upset about that statement. I just, it feels like it leads to everybody's exceptional when that means no one is. It's kind of like everybody's super unique, so no one's unique. So, you know, we kind of pick on the whole snowflake thing when we say that. But I mean, it really is true. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
It could be that we're picking nits with that particular one.
Probably.
But
fair enough. Yeah. He made some other comments that were interesting too. He said it's more like Scooby-Doo on Zombie Island, the D&D
version. Oh, we skipped one.
Oh, I think I talked about that. The idea was foes only play dead until they get a chance to rise again. The idea is you can't kill the Dark Lords. And he made a comment that it would make his players angry.
Oh, yeah.
Beat him down, then found out later on he wasn't really dead, or that he just faked it. And then when you guys left, he was back. And he goes,
I don't think that just applies to the Dark Lords, though, does it?
Oh, really? I think so. I could be wrong. Hmm. One thing, maybe they're talking about just general foes that they'll try to play dead. He said his players would cut their heads off and put them in like holy boxes and bury them in the ocean. And then what are you going to do? A week later, you're going to tell him, yeah, he's already reconstituted himself. Yeah, I don't know. I guess that would be a little ridiculous.
Yeah.
But he mentioned how you know, I like his Scooby-Doo comment. He said this. This is pretty bold. And it strikes a chord with me, and I'm not in any way trying to talk about canceling. I know right. A lot of cancel culture folks will say, oh, it's the same thing. I don't believe it is. He says, don't give them your money since they're not making a good product. I agree with that.
Yep.
Not something I want. I'm not buying it. Will not give them money. And people know, listen to this, that I don't pay for WotC stuff, generally speaking. Though, to be fair, I had a great deal this past weekend. Patrick turned me on to. I got a closing game store, buy two, get two free. And I bought some WotC stuff, but it was super on sale. So, at a big discount. So they didn't get their, you know, I don't feel like they got their full cut of things. And it was some things that were pretty, you know, neutral.
Once it goes through a few hands, I mean, what are you going to do?
Yeah. He made a comment too. And this is where I think I get what they're saying. They don't seem to like, they only have issues with stereotypes that they don't like.
Right. So that,
they love to stereotype.
They can stereotype things.
Yep.
But they don't want. They just have some pet peeves on certain stereotypes. Other ones are all right. And as far as the money part, Aaron, I'm sure, and us, we're not calling on people to en masse boycott anybody.
No.
We're just stating our position of not buying their stuff. And
they're not getting my stuff.
If you're going to call that cancel culture, it's more words that are meaningless because the left doesn't know how to use words.
Right.
Some of
them. At least the extreme left in the U.S. toward Good Mania, if he's listening.
Yeah, a lot of them, not all, they don't know how to use words.
No. A neutral review, which I thought about it, was less neutral. Professor Dungeon Master gave one. And his good things, which I've listed, the things he thought were bad, things he thought were good. And it's literally twice as many good as bad. Mm-hmm. Twice as many bad as good.
Right, right.
He liked the charts for making your own domain. That sounded kind of cool. He liked the boons and flaws charts. He liked the haunted one and investigator classes because he thought they were flavorful. A haunted character, a character that's haunted, would be perfect in Domains of Dread.
And sure. Investigator that makes sense.
Would be perfect. The horror trinkets table, he thought had a good creepy vibe rolling. And he thought that he didn't go expound upon this. The House of Lament, the adventure at the end, he thought was really good. That's the things he thought were good. And this is why I call this a neutral review, though I think it leans toward the other. His big statement, which is number one, I love this one. I think he's right. There's a huge tonal clash. It's superheroic fantasy and gothic horror don't fit.
They don't mix oil and water.
Right. To me, that's why I hate to say it, as much as I love Ravenloft, I do not think that it fits D&D well. If you hop down to his eighth one, this is how I would want to run a Ravenloft game. He said, this is great. Joe would hate it. Mm-hmm. Enter Ravenloft as a seventh level PC. You get changed into the clothes of the domain you're in. Let's say Barovia. So you're wearing Barovian clothes. All your crap is gone. All your gear is gone. And your hit points become first level. And they stay that way. If you die, you become a ghost stuck in the domain. That would be a horror adventure.
Right.
Because it would be horrific and terrifying. Both the player, and you have to roleplay the character too, but the player too would be like, oh my God, my character's in deep trouble. Yeah. I have to be careful. If you roll in with seventh level characters, five magic items apiece, you're going to beat down most of the Dark Lords.
Right.
So I just don't see how it fits. Now, having said that, I've had fantastically good times playing in Ravenloft. Mm-hmm. So it works in terms of at the table I have fun, but when I think about it, when I go back, the best adventures, I always ran my characters on the very low end. If there was a level range for the characters, I always had you on the low end. Mm-hmm. And not just because I wanted to keep you low level, I knew that at high level, if you had lots of magic items, you were higher level, you would smoke everything. And right. what silver weapons when you got a plus three Vorpal? You know, who cares?
Yeah, I guess you would have to do that. And doing all that could cause some stress for players.
Yeah, and I think a lot of players would hate that. Yeah. I played seven levels. We played for 6 months, and I'm seventh level. Now you're taking all my crap away? Yep.
Barovia is a traditional type town.
Yeah.
So if you had a character that was playing against type a bit and got transported and now you're in some, you know, fairly conservative Barovian attire, it might make you feel, may not make you very happy.
It's pretty silly when you think about these gothic horror type stories. He made a comment, imagine a tiefling warlock. How are they not, at a minimum, run out of town by a village?
Right.
You place them these crazy races and classes they brought in. What is the freaking point? Because honestly, they would lose their minds. Anything, even an elf or a dwarf would be look pretty strange. I mean, is Ravenhall cosmopolitan? Get real.
No, it's not. And it shouldn't be.
Yeah.
It being cosmopolitan and everything's good, everybody's fine, does not fit with the tone of a gothic horror type of thing.
And he meant, you know, how they mentioned you're supposed to, one of their big statements I saw in several of the reviews, scare the characters, not the players.
Yeah, we were talking about that. That's stupid.
But hold on. The backside of the book says, face your fears.
Yeah.
He pointed this out. This is Professor DM pointing it out. That was hilarious. He also mentioned in terms of actual design, that waste of space, the inside, front, and back covers should have had the charts in there and would have saved a lot of space. Mechanically, he thought, all lineages, not races, are the same now because of Tasha's plus two to one stat, plus one to other. That seems silly. I mean, I just don't.
A race is fashion statement, not really anything.
Yeah, it's not anything important. And I thought this was a good comment. He thinks dark vision, which two of the three races had, the new races, the new lineages they have in there, Hexblood and some other thing. He thinks dark vision kind of ruins a horror game. And I kind of agree. I mean, not that it's the ultimate power of all things, but part of the horror is darkness and the unknown. Mm-hmm. If you can see to the dark's no longer scary.
Right.
Yeah.
I agree. I think that whole thing about scaring the characters and not the players, it's kind of...
It's too hard.
When you're watching a scary movie, who complains about that? Are there people out there who say we shouldn't make scary movies because they're scary? Because if you're playing Ravenloft, the appropriate level of how scared you might get would be that.
Yeah.
I'm different.
I think you're hard pressed to generate fear at the table, and I'm sure DMs out there will disagree with me. But I think you're hard pressed to generate that fear.
Well, that kind of fear, scary movie fear.
Yeah, and I think. And I think really what they're saying is, I think it's related to the X card. They don't want to scare people because of their issues. You know, if something triggers you, a DM shouldn't use that to scare the players. Though you could argue it's horror. Maybe I should try to trigger you.
Or if you have a bunch of folks at your table, mm-hmm. that horror is not a good fit.
Correct.
Don't do it.
Correct. Absolutely.
So their answer to don't do it is to have a domain of dread where you mm-hmm. face your fears, but not really.
Correct. And you play your superheroes in a fantasy world.
Right.
So, yeah.
Which is really disappointing.
Yeah,
you shouldn't call it domain of dread.
No.
They should call it the domain of...
Slight discomfort.
Just slight discomfort, yeah.
He said the art was kind of bland, very few good places. Neither here nor there. I thought it was interesting. He said, magic is rare for the denizens of the domain, but apparently not the PCs. So that's just kind of dumb. And I thought it was great. He talked about the session. I called it the session zero foolishness. Like he said, you should ask. And in this, I think Pedantic Guy said it too. You should make sure with your players that it's okay for characters to die in the game. And it's okay for them to lose control, like a charm person or something.
Well, like that whole the mist thing.
Oh, he mentioned that. Yeah.
Yeah.
The mist—that's automatically loss of control. So it's okay to lose, to be swept away into Ravenloft against your will, because the book says that. But of course, they might say, well, the counter is, well, everybody agrees to play Ravenloft, so that's a conceit. And I'm like, okay, but everybody agrees to play Ravenloft, so in my mind, conceit is also things about to get scary.
Right.
And you're about to be weak, but that's not what they're doing. They're just blending these two genres that I'm just going to maintain doesn't work. That kind of thing doesn't work. If you're going to do horror in a D&D style, you got to roll like Professor DM said.
Yeah.
5 points, no armor, no weapons. Good luck. A werewolf's hunting you. What do you do?
Right.
All right.
I agree. I agreed with that. When I watched that Professor DM video, and when he said, I was like, oh, that definitely would be scary, and it's definitely appropriate. I mean, what if you rolled into the mist at first level?
Yeah.
I mean,
that's how I solved the problem.
Yeah.
I took low level characters into Ravenloft, and I think
that's what you should do.
I think
that's another option.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, you like it, you play it. It just seems watered down. Doesn't seem to fit my idea of D&D really. I would play it, but players have to realize, look, I'm going to make your life miserable. You're going to have to deal with the fact things are going to suck. You have to work really hard to be able to kill one of the lords or fight the foe. The foes are going to be terrifying. It's going to be not quite Call of Cthulhu, but not too many steps away in terms of your ineptitude against the main bad guys.
Right.
So, yeah. But on to Drow lore, if you're ready, unless you got more to say about Ravenloft.
Oh, no. We're good.
So this was interesting. So I think you sent this to me. It was about how the lore was retconned. And, I mean, this has clearly got a lot of – I'm sorry. I'm just going to say it, SJW wove crap. But I'm not totally – I don't totally hate it. I just – it feels weak. Like, they're breaking the Drow up now into three different sort of clans. The Uta Drow, who follow Loth's teachings, was once widely believed that all Drows lived below ground and worshipped Loth. Yeah, widely believed because that's how it was set up. But truths that have long been buried are now beginning to come to light. Okay, so the Uta Drow are the Drow you and I would think of. You know, they were Loth followers that split off from the sunlight, something the elves of the surface, and became the Drow that we all have known.
I want to stop you.
Yeah.
The names of these groups are stupid.
Agree. Uta Drow is literally stupid. Right.
And Aven Drow, the next one, how do you even pronounce that?
I would say Aven Drow.
Yeah. A-E-V-E-N Drow.
Whatever. But here's the dumbest part of it. One of the truths that's coming to light are the Aven Drow, or Starlight Elves. Drow who rejected Loth, remaining true to their innate integrity. So that Drow were initially super integrity and vanished into the north. So they're these Drow that are actually still, you know, really good guys at heart. And look, you can do this. I don't care if you do this. It's just not the way I'd want to run Drow. I like them as very few good guys. You got a Dritz here and there. You got somebody comes along who's kind of neutral. But the Drow are these dark, matriarchal societies run by the priestess of Loth, who with an iron fist rule things.
Back in the day, they had a sect of Drow who reject Loth. And
Elastray from Forgotten Realms.
Well, no. No, different. They were all worshippers of some moon goddess.
And Elastray is the moon goddess's name in the Forgotten Realms.
Oh, right.
So, yeah, and that's okay. That was a small... I mean, I don't care
if it was a small exception to the general rule.
And it was to let people play Drow more common. And, you know, do whatever you want if you want to. I don't care. The next one, and this is where I'm getting kind of pissed off. You might also travel far to the south where the genteel green shadow elves live a life of the kind of environmental harmony that would give a Republican a coronary. Thank you. The lore and Drow draw their wisdom from their environment, the generosity of earth, the mystery of sky, and the complex harmony of forest. Oh, I don't know. How about regular elves? That sounds a lot like regular stinking elves, except they hate Republicans.
Yeah.
They had to squeeze that in.
Yeah. That's just dumb.
It's just dumb. No, that comment's by the writer. That's the writer.
It's by the writer. The writer says it's the writer of the article describing the new lore.
Right.
This isn't the published lore from Wizards doesn't say that.
Yeah, I'm sure it doesn't. But it's
Belleboss Souls. Belleboss Souls. Their writing is poor.
Yeah, that is
in general.
Yeah.
And two, it's pretty clear where they stand, which is fine.
Okay. I mean, I guess I probably identify more with Republicans than I do Democrats, but I'm really neither one. Mm-hmm. I lean more libertarian in my later life. But why do you got to bring that up? I mean, I don't say you're like a Democrat, but you know what? It's fine. If you do, because I do SJW, I do woke, fine. You say it, that's fine.
Yeah.
But here's my annoyance. Okay, I'm going to read this whole dang this paragraph here. Why now? This is the ending paragraph of the article. I just cut and paste. Why now? Perhaps because Wizards of the Coast is trying to reckon with their 40-odd year history and the implications that all drow are evil just because. Okay. Or even that all drow follow Loth. Because they did. That's what they said at the beginning. Okay, so what? And are all on board with being evil, and with the lone exception of Drizzt, a.k.a. the model minority? What is that?
They didn't want to use some other colloquial terms for the minority that went along with, you know, the white folk.
Oh, the token. Got,
the token.
The token.
And there's
the
some
token.
Other one. There's some yeah. other one. But they used that one instead.
I'm going to use the words. They call him an Uncle Tom, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they're connecting to black people, and that's kind of
phraseology. Which is dumb, because they're not.
It's dumb beyond belief. It's not.
It's not.
It's great to see them moving away from the harmful stereotypes. Okay, whatever. While at the same time opening new doors to explore what drow are and how they fit into the canon of the realms. I hope this is just the first step, and that the days of all evil races are gone. Yay, so now devils aren't evil. Orcs, as written now, are always evil savages, and that's neither fun... no particularly satisfying writing. Orcs are monsters. They shouldn't be fun.
As if this person knows what satisfying writing is.
And as if this person speaks for everyone.
Right, right.
Oh, this move to a more broad, diverse perspective of drow, we're getting an idea of what a more inclusive future of Dungeons & Dragons could be like. And honestly, Joe, it's about time. That's what it says. It only says Joe in there. It pauses and refers to Joe.
Yeah, yeah. It's speaking directly to me. All drow are evil just because.
Yeah.
That was never true.
No. They fell in under a demon lord's sway.
Right, right.
Evil comes along with that plan.
The problem with a lot of these analyses like this is they're so superficial.
Yeah.
They don't bother reading. They look at it with a modern lens. And all evil races are perceived by them as being stand-ins
for minorities.
Minorities, and they're not.
I have a question, Joe. I have a question, though. Are the dark elves black people or are the orcs black people? I can't remember what the rule is.
Yeah. Probably both are somehow.
Okay, yeah, my bad.
Right. So, but they're not. No. Neither case is true.
No.
Tolkien categorically denied it.
Yep.
Many times. I think he even said that he modeled them after the more nomadic steppe. The word is escaping me. Asian, not African.
Right.
And even then, it's just modeled after them.
Sounds like it was modeled a little bit. Maybe the way I've read about orcs.
The Mongols.
Yeah. The Mongol hordes who were very violent at Genghis Khan. Okay, you gonna call those people cool people? Were they good people? Yeah. No. Good try.
He modeled them after their behavior.
Yep. Correct.
Right. Not saying anything about their skin tone or their.
Do orcs look like Mongols or Asian people? No. Do they look like black people? No. Because their skin is dark sometimes. Sometimes it's green. Sometimes it's tan. Sometimes they're pig snouted. Sometimes they're not. I mean, come on.
They're archetypes. They're not one-to-one in any sense. They're archetypes. That's how these things work.
In the end, D&D and people that play D&D can make their drow. Every race has their... a full range of alignments. Every bipedal humanoid is full range of alignments. Before long, it's going to be everything. I mean, what do they say? But moved more broad. Where is it at? Great to see the moving away from horrible stereotypes. At the same time, opening new doors to explore what drow are. No, the days of all evil races are gone. I mean, that's stupid. Are they going to... I mean, literally, I'm not joking. Are devils and demons now not going to be... I mean, Planescape allowed for the possibility of the random good devil or demon, but they even said, are they really? Are they actually doing the long play? You know? And so it's like, you know, you do whatever you want in your world. But in mine, orcs, for the most part, are super evil. If a character wanted to play an orc or a half-orc, I could probably be convinced of it. But they would not be looked upon greatly when they come into towns. Dark elves are evil. If you want to play a dark elf, you're not going to be looked greatly upon when you come into town. You're going to get a lot of suspicion. That's how it was in the old days. It doesn't mean I'm right. It just means how I'm doing it. They can do theirs however they want.
Yeah.
as dumb as they want to be. Sorry, I just think it's personally my personal opinion, and they think I'm dumb and rancid and all this other stinky stuff, you know. So, whatever, you're welcome. You know, welcome.
They can play however they want to at their table.
I'm not coming to take their books. I ain't calling anybody on them. I'm not canceling anybody. So,
you can,
but I don't care for it.
WotC can go the completely diverse route.
Yep.
And do that with the devils and the demons and the angels. The angels are no longer good guys.
Correct.
Not necessarily.
I'm more evil, the dark angels.
Which is fine.
Yeah, it's fine. All of it's fine. You do what you want.
Well, no, I'm just saying there are fallen angels in the Bible. Right. So if you want to make fallen angels, that's cool. And there are plenty of them.
Even if there wasn't, and then there's no idea of demons being raised to sainthood, but if you want to have one that becomes good and change of heart, I'm not even totally against that. But it needs to be, I like the idea of Dritz being super, not unique, but unbelievably rare. I like that better than, like, I got a whole clan of Illustrate following Drow. I mean, it's just, okay, so now they're just another, there's nothing special about them falling under the sway of the Dark Lord.
Right, right. So, yeah. It's just crap. That's what I think is boring. They're saying having orcs being evil savages isn't fun. Why isn't it?
It is for me. I got something we said earlier today. I like the idea of having some evil I can kick their teeth in and be confident that that's what I need to do. Everybody should check out Joe's article on the orcs on our page. It's really, really good. And I think I like that interpretation of them. But not everybody will. We've already got we got pooped on by some people on MeWe or whatever.
Only thing I got was WTF. It wasn't very useful. It'd be one thing if he said, hey, have you ever considered this? Or blah, blah, blah. You're obviously a racist or whatever.
Obviously. Yeah.
But yeah.
All right.
This is just they're sinking into blandness.
Yeah. That's what I agree. That's bland. Right,
because what they're doing is every people group, their only difference is superficial.
Mm-hmm.
There's no innate difference.
Right.
But a lot of folks on this side of the political or social spectrum don't believe in innate anything.
I know.
And that's fine. Why can't I have innate stuff in a fantasy game that's make-believe?
Correct.
So even if it's not true, why can't it be in a
crew,
in a fictional game?
Yeah.
Because it's fictional, according to them. So it could be in a fictional game. This is innately a thing.
Yep. They can have the fairy, green shadow, dark elves who are literally just regular elves. If you're green, nature loving elves, but you're dark elves, you're just elves.
Mm-hmm.
That's dumb.
Right. Just and I'm going to say a thing about environmental harmony. There's no such thing.
Right.
Talk about earthquakes, very harmonious.
Jump right down in the hole. When the earthquake starts, you just stand on the crack, see what happens. See how harmonious things work
natural,
out.
The natural way of the nature, there are parts of it where you could find harmonies, but there's lots that are going to try to kill you.
Now, as we end here, I'm going to give Andy props here because I do think I've winced a little. I do think I've gone to the edge of they're taking over my game today a little bit close. So I'm going to give him some credit for calling spade a spade. But you know what? I don't apologize for it.
No.
It's just how I feel. And you know what? I'm one big dude that doesn't really matter in the grand scheme of role playing. No one really cares what I think, and that's okay.
And if we grow an audience that likes both parts of this, or many of them, they just ignore this part.
That's fine.
Fine with me.
Yep. And you can. And so you can support us and say, I think those dudes are douche nozzles. Don't listen to their negative plane. Like Andy said, you know, I don't really like how they roll there, but you have good gaming comments. Thank you, Andy. Appreciate it. Either way, you're welcome to your opinion, dude. All right, man. I think we're done with this. I've whinged enough.
Yes, I have whinged successfully. I think we're
going to 20. He chose some really good words. I'm sorry. I'm not really picking on Andy. I just like the words. Like whinged. What was the one you used today? Noisome for smelly?
Noisome.
Interesting. Okay. I'm going to look that one up.
It's a colloquial thing for the folks over in the UK, I'm sure. Because noisome Stinky.
Stinky.
They don't really sound similar.
No, they don't. But, you know, it could just be a thing.
It's a thing.
So,
like saying, that's bad when you mean good.
Right. That was only bad. How cool was that when you don't mean cold?
Right.
You're neat. Impressive. All right, man. I think we'll call it good here. I think.
All right.
Enough of that.
Everybody have a good one.
Out.